public inspection, including the receipt, discussion of information or testimony that's specifically required to be maintained as confidential by state and federal law pursuant to AR 1038. Since this meeting is being recorded, we will ask all members of the board members and staff to introduce themselves to the record.
Kettle Mountain staff.
Keith Blanchard.
Craig Jacob, board member.
Jim Dugan, board member.
Peter Steiner, board member.
Paul Mittman, board member.
Dr. Jennifer Life, board member.
Terry Stanfield, director.
Assistant Attorney General Frankie Schenekberg, attorney for the board.
Thank you. A little housekeeping thing besides the phone is that at 11:45-ish, we will be stopping for half an hour. Those of you who are on the phone, could you please put your phones on mute? Thank you. The audio recording of the October 25th, 2018 meeting have been posted on the website and is the official record of the meeting. Ms. Stanfield, have you confirmed that the minutes are posted and are audible?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Are there any questions? If not, may I please have a motion to approve the audio recording?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The first item on the agenda is a status update for Arizona Summit Law School. Ms. Stanfield, would you like to?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. At your April 2017 board meeting, the board considered the notice that the American Bar Association had placed American Summit Law School on probation. After review and discussion, the board took the following action: to enter into a non-disciplinary consent agreement with the stipulations to post a surety bond in the amount of 2.9, but I do believe it was revised later in the meeting to 1.5. A contingency teach-out plan, provide student educational records, and to appear before the board quarterly to give you an update with ABA and any other activities that may be going on. Here representing the institution is Mr. Lively and Nicole Stanton and Penny Woolrich, Dean.
Did I come forward and one of you just pull up a chair? And Mr. Thompson also on the phone.
Beauty in the middle.
Elected to give us the update.
If I may, just kind of lay out for the board how we intend to proceed today, if it's okay with you, and you can tell us if you think that that is okay. What we'd like to do is have Dean Woolrich kind of give you a status update from a boots-on-the-ground perspective as to what's going on at the law school. Mr. Lively is here to talk about some of the challenges that the school is facing, because, of course, that is part of the status update. And then I will be talking a little bit about a request that we will be making to potentially modify the bond amount, given some of the changes that are going on at the school and the financial status of the school. Mr. Thompson is on the phone to answer any questions about the financial aspects. I know that Ms. Stanfield requested a copy of the financial statements. They're in the process of being finalized, and they should be in final order next week by the 31st. That is what the auditor is saying. So we didn't want to provide a draft version of those, and so you should have the final version of those next week. So is that okay to proceed in that manner?
Certainly.
Okay. Dean Woolrich?
Thank you. Good morning, members of the board. It's a pleasure, to be here. again, I think this probably marks about our one-year anniversary of me appearing before the board on behalf of Arizona Summit Law School. There are four major areas that I wanted to provide an update in, and that's admissions curriculum, academic support, and bar pass. And in our admissions, we provided information before, but we raised our admissions quartiles so that we're seeing a higher admission qualifications of students, and that's part of being in response to Standard 501. And with that, faculty members are reporting improved performance in the classes with the students. We're seeing improved performance in terms of their final examinations. I believe after the fall semester, out of the 145 or so students we have enrolled at the school now, only 10 of them are on academic probation, which is a really good sign in terms of the achievement of the students. And so we continue to recruit a higher profile. Of course, probation has impacted the number of students that we were able to recruit. In our fall class, we had 27 new starts. In our spring class, we have 12 new starts, and we're hoping that being released from probation will help us to engender more applicants as well as more people that will be enrolled at the law school. We made dramatic changes in our curriculum over the last, I would say over the last 2 years, but certainly in the last year, we've made changes that are comply with the reliable plan that we presented to the American Bar Association. One of the things that we did, for example, is we went back to a more traditional first-year law school class where the fundamentals of the law are really being taught and reinforced with the students, and we believe that that's going to certainly help the students in their performance through the rest of their law school career, but also when they get ready to take the bar. We have implemented certain requirements for the students so that one of the things that we learned is that many of our students were not taking the bar-tested courses, which then impacts their ability to pass the bar if they haven't been exposed to the subject matter. So the faculty passed a resolution that requires all of our students to take all bar-tested courses so that we can assure at least the beginning of preparation for the bar exam when they get ready to study for the exam and they've been exposed to that subject matter. We have created a writing center and changed leadership in that writing center. One of our academic success instructors is known as a writing expert because of her 20 or so years of teaching writing. And so she is making some tremendous changes with our students and with our writing center to reinforce our students' ability to perform better in the area of writing. I believe we have one of the most dynamic academic success and bar prep teams that we have had in the history of the school. I would say together, the five members of the team probably have close to 75 years of experience in terms of the law and at least 25 years in legal education. So we're really happy about that, and we can already see the difference that is occurring in terms of students participating in our academic success program and students participating in our bar prep program. Our bar pass results in July of 2017, of course, were not as high as we would have liked them to be. We have hoped that our February 2017 bar exam results will incrementally improve, and we're looking at a predicted pass rate of about 35%. And so we're happy with that because that's showing that incremental increase that we know as the entering quartiles and quality indicators go up, so will the bar pass rates go up. We have consolidated into three floors at the law school, which of course is located downtown, and that has made some cost savings available for for us, but it also has really created a better environment, I think, for the law school to be consolidated, and having all faculty, all classrooms on one floor, most of our student service, student-facing services also on that one floor. So it's more of a what I believe and feel like is an academic community. I think we are in complete compliance with our reliable plan. We're also in complete compliance with the remedial plan required by the ABA. As we finish this week with our drop date, we will be providing some updated information to the board as part of the consent agreement. We provide information at the end of enrollment or beginning of enrollment each semester, and so we'll get that. We'll also have an updated report going out to the ABA, and we'll send the board a copy of that report.
So you said you were projecting a 35% pass rate coming this February?
Yes.
And how will that fare with the ABA?
Well, it's hard to say how it will fare. I think the ABA will look at the increase between the last bar exam and the next administration of the bar, and any increase is also always a positive sign. Now, the 35% is today. That could change effectively next week because sometimes our students or graduates will decide not to take the bar, or they'll decide to take a bar not in Arizona but in another state, and that will affect our predicted bar pass rate. So next week when I provide you all a report, I will provide any updated information that we have from our statisticians.
When do those results become known? When do they become known, those results?
The February results will be out in May.
Okay.
There's one more point of note that I know is important to you because you mentioned it to us. I think it's been a while now since the dean and I have had to appear on a student complaint. So that's also another positive note that I would want you to acknowledge and take note of, is that we have made an effort internally at the school to try to drive that consistency with regard to adhering to the policies and processes and executing upon them with more fidelity and consistency. And so I'm sure you noticed that, but we also wanted to make sure that you did notice it since you had brought it to our attention at one time earlier. All right. Thanks. Sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to amplify a little bit. And by the way, good morning, everyone, and thanks for hearing us. Actually, I've got three things that I'd like to say that amplify Dean Wilrich's observations. First of all, I think there may be a perception, not necessarily with the board, but it's an important one in terms of how the outside world perceives us. We're not out of compliance with the ABA standard on bar pass. In fact, I think we have a pretty impressive ultimate bar pass rate. And when you look at schools like ours, I think it's really important to understand from whence our students come. Many of them come from disadvantaged backgrounds. They've been left behind by primary education and secondary education. Many of them are in catch-up mode, so it follows that many of them are not going to pass the bar examination the first time. So if you're going to be in the business of diversifying what is the least diverse white-collar profession, that's something that you have to take into account. Now, if you look at the ABA watch list for those schools that are considered to be at risk, frankly, my concern is that there's not the level of sensitivity to that reality that I think is appropriate if you're going to make any progress toward diversification, and if you're going to be a school that is truly committed to that type of social utility. With respect to your question about how the ABA is going to respond to a 35% bar pass rate or a 40% bar pass rate, I think the real key is what for academic profile looks like for our NRM class. That's how I think the ABA is going to look at us, again, given the standards in which we have been found out of compliance with. And we benchmark against other institutions that are similarly situated, and I think one of the best benchmarks is Valparaiso University, which was sanctioned for reasons similar to us. At least in the 25th percentile, we are coming in at pretty much where Valparaiso is. I think by fall, given our projections for fall, we'll be able to demonstrate for this calendar year, which is the relevant year that the ABA uses, that we're similarly situated with Valparaiso, and Valparaiso recently was released from sanctions. So that's encouraging. One other thought, maybe in the memo that you received recently, is that out of the 25 to 30 law schools that are on the ABA watch list, I believe we had one of the highest, and maybe actually the highest increase in LSAT scores. So if you look at each of those indicators, I think there is reason for us to have confidence, we do have confidence, that the school is on the right track, and that we can't make the decision for the ABA, but we anticipate that if we have a fair hearing with the ABA, that we do have a good opportunity to get off probation. Again, we can't speak for the ABA, we can speak for ourselves, and speaking for ourselves, we're feeling positive about the progress we've made based upon Dean Willrich's observations, and really the caliber of leadership that we've seen on the academic side.
Do you have any questions based upon that?
Yeah, and I will be happy to talk about some of our challenges. Certainly, we've made significant progress. We're not an institution without challenges. I suppose we would not be subject to a bond requirement if that were not the case. And challenge goes with the territory of being on probation. What I equate it to is being put in the position of Back to the Future. It's akin to being in a startup mode. The only difference, I suppose, is that you're operating with a set of sanctions. And actually, I see an upside to probation. The upside is that it enables you to self-reflect. It enables you to focus, not just on the future, but on the past. And as I look back, I was actually here at the beginning when FIGC started. I left after the first year, came back a couple of years ago. And I think the opportunity that we've been able to capture is identifying and being able to learn from our mistakes. And if you can have that type of mindset, and if you can have that type of buy-in from faculty and staff, you have an energy and you have a vision, and you're able to recapture those aspects of the vision that have dissipated over the years. And there were aspects of the vision that did dissipate. Now, there's some hiring decisions, there were some debates, there were some unintended consequences that followed from some of those actions. And learning from your experience, I think that is a linchpin for a strategy and a process that enables you to free yourself from probation. When I look at our primary challenge, and this by no means discounts the importance of getting off probation, nor does it discount the challenge of improving our bar examination performance, first-time bar examination performance. I think one of our primary challenges, and it goes back to our founding, is our proprietary status. The market, the traditional legal education field, has never looked favorably at proprietary education. In fact, historically, up until the mid-1990s, the ABA did not allow for proprietary law schools. And there's been this persistent hangover that is, defines proprietary education and legal education objectionable in the sense that proprietary equates with predatory, that it's hard to envision, particularly if you're coming from an ideological perspective. It's very hard to envision that a proprietary institution can be an institution of social utility. And much of what you may have read about us, I believe, comes from a perspective that preordains the conclusion. I've never read a media report or heard a media report that does not have in the leading sentence, Arizona Summit Law School, a proprietary institution, with a subtext to that, and it usually follows in the story, is an assumption that there's something about a school. And what gets obscured is that the founding purpose really was one of social utility. Those of us who come from legal education and were frustrated by the failed efforts, or really the disinterest beyond writing about stuff, but not acting about stuff that would actually have a meaningful impact on diversity. As I mentioned before, we're the least diverse legal profession. And if you look over the years, it's been flatlined, progress. So unintentionally, I believe, legal education basically perpetuates the historic legacy of exclusion. It goes way back in our country's history. And legal education today, it's really not making any progress. And that's what brought us into existence. We became proprietary because we couldn't find a traditional institution that was particularly interested in a mission that precluded opportunity to do well in the ranking. So given that backdrop, I think what's really incumbent upon us is to be more proactive, more aggressive in telling our story. Probation certainly obscures the message about what our mission is, but as we do move beyond probation, I think it's very important. I'm not sure that conversion to a not-for-profit status, which we are working on, is going to entirely occlude that perception. I think, again, ideology and agendas, in the outside world, particularly in legal education, could persist. But, again, where we set ourselves up, I believe, for a fall, played into the hands of our critics, was the decline in our first-time bar pass rate, the traditional measure by legal educators and the ABA in terms of, are you meeting our expectations? Notwithstanding that we're doing a good job on ultimate bar pass rate. So those are some general observations. Three primary challenges: getting off, somebody getting off of probation, improving our first-time bar examination performance, and effectuating the breakthrough that is going to enable the outside world, particularly media, particularly persons who really have not seen us close up or are familiar with our history, to really begin to see us differently. So thanks for the time.
Your meeting with ABA is March 15th to
17th? Yes, and we have a report that we're submitting the 1st of February.
And will the February rates be out by March 15th?
Bar pass rates? No, I believe they come out in May.
Mid-May. So do you know if the ABA's intention is to take action about taking off probation based on the report you're submitting or on getting?
Well, we have not heard anything about whether or not bar pass rates. Again, we have not been found out of compliance with the bar pass standard. In fact, there are two ways that bar examination performance is measured. First-time bar pass rate, our current bar pass rates, Yeah, there are times when we left the state in the past, but the last few years, as you know, there has been a precipitous decline. The ultimate bypass rate, which is the alternative basis for satisfying the ABA standard, we are in compliance with that.
And is there any update on the potential merging with other?
Nothing beyond the memorandum that we submitted last week. There is a memorandum of understanding with an institution out of state, and we're cognizant of the fact that there are a number of regulatory hoops that we have to jump through, including with this board. Department of Education obviously plays a critical role, and the ABA would need to acquiesce to a material change of ownership.
And you mentioned that your financials won't be available to us till next week or so.
Audited financial statements are forthcoming, and we will be able to share those very quickly after this meeting.
Can you share any preview of your financial status?
Yeah, I think Scott Thompson, who is CFO at Infolaw, probably is in the best position to answer any questions that you have. Is that okay?
That's fine. I was just the current ratio is off kilter based on the last financials and how they were doing based on the lower enrollments and so forth.
And I have a similar question. And in your report to us of January 16th, it says details with respect to the capital raises will be provided prior to the board meeting, but I didn't see anything in this packet that talks about the status of those capital.
Yeah, and unfortunately that was an optimistic statement, and perhaps Mr. Thompson will be in a position to share some of that.
Thank you.
And I apologize that we were not able to deliver on our optimism.
Mr. Thompson, this is Jim Dugan. I'm one of the board members, and it was me that asked that question. So perhaps you could address the status of the capital situation.
Yes, this is Scott. So we will not be adding financial statements in just over a week. I think that the best thing for us to do is to provide an analysis for the board that will provide a complete picture of the financial statements, both balance sheet and income statement at that time. I think that will be most useful in terms of a preview. You will see that revenues are down year over year, and that's a conscious choice on our part to make sure that we're recruiting the correct quality of students that we believe have the best opportunity to pass the bar examination. So we have consciously chosen to have lower class sizes with higher quality indicators. So on the other side of that, we've also taken actions on the expense side to reduce expenses commensurate to revenues, and the best example of that has already been brought up, whereby we had facilities that were in excess of 200,000 square feet, and we have consolidated those down to about 35 to 40% of that amount, which brought substantial savings from a facilities perspective. We have also continued to look at the what I would call the non-academic functions to make sure that we're operating in the most efficient and effective manner in accordance with the size of our student population, while investing in critical success functions such as bypass and academic success functions. So we've added resources in those areas to make sure that we get standards up to speed. So we have, in terms of capital, we have done some things over the past year which will bring stability to the organization. One of those is we have sold an asset that was not, it was a corporate asset, but it's not connected to Arizona Summit Law School, which did provide cash to the organization. That transaction was completed in July, and we have raised approximately $11 million through a first round of capital raise that has already been funded and is in the business. And in the next update that I can provide, the path that we're working on for the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Question. Did you have a question?
Is this article provided by the law school or the or is this the staff provided this article?
Happened to be in position for this year.
Yeah. The article above the law. Okay, so that was just something that was published. In it, it says that this month that the ABA found the schools out of compliance with another financial. I'll just read it. Last week, the school received a letter from the ABA letting the administration know they were out of compliance with another accreditation standard, this one having to do with finances. And in response, Mr. Lively, you said, last week we completed a second multi-million dollar capital raise to solidify the school's financial position. So is this referencing something that we've already been talking about, or is this...
Yeah, a little bit. What happened, we had a proceeding in September. And then we were asked to provide a written submission by early December. The challenge for us in terms of making that submission was that things were still in progress. Now, we're about ready to provide the ABA with an update. I do not believe we were actually found out of compliance, but there has been a request for us to make a submission that will enable the committee to make a determination as to whether or not we're out of compliance. And as noted, there have been material developments since that December meeting that I believe are going to be relevant to the committee's final determination. I don't believe they would ask us for this follow-up session, except for the fact that I believe they understand that this has been a work in progress, hence no final determination. They would actually have to make a recommendation to the council for the section of legal education if it was going to be in a position of sanctions.
In other words, the letter dated January 3rd from the American Bar Association that concluded that the law school is not in compliance with standard 2202A concerning the adequacy of finances is not a final.
Is that quote from the newspaper?
No, it's from the
accreditation.
From the accreditation committee letter.
Okay.
So, would you like to see it?
Let me just speak to it briefly. That's not a final determination. It goes as a recommendation to the council. However, the ABA Accreditation Committee has asked us to appear in March to present the information that we couldn't present in December. So the audited financials, the budget that Mr. Thompson has spoken to today, that's what will be presented to the ABA at the March meeting. I believe once that information is presented, there won't be a recommendation to the council to find us out of compliance with 202.
I guess, but the wording in this letter clearly says that at its meeting on December 7th and 8th, they concluded that the law school is not in compliance with that standard. And it sounded like what was mentioned here was that the not been found to be out of compliance as previously you have?
Well, the final determination is by the council. The accreditation committee is in a recommending position. It can certainly make an assessment and it can make a determination, but that is for the committee's purpose. Again, we are going to appear before the accreditation committee. We were in a position in December to only speak in generalities. If I'm in the ABA's position, I want to see some hard data. I want to see some specificity. And we're going to be in a position, as we are going to be with the board, to provide detailed audited financial statements. And we simply did not have the ability to provide the type of information that I think the ABA legitimately is requesting of the institution.
When is the fiscal year close?
Our fiscal year closes at the end of July, but there's process to complete the financial statements. And Scott Thompson may be able to give you a little background on how the process played out over the course of, I guess it's been several months.
I guess the follow-up is, does it usually take 7 months to...
I don't believe so.
...to an audit?
Yes. Scott, are you there?
Yes. No, it typically doesn't take 6 months. So July 31st is the fiscal year, and we will have complete by January 31st, which is 6 months, which is when the Department of Education requires the audits to be completed. This year, in our world, was anything but normal. As you are probably aware, Charlotte School of Law closed, and there's associated work to do with respect to that transaction, and there are also other positive subsequent events that have taken time to make sure that we had the accurate financial statements pulled together. So this is a very unusual year in the terms of completing the financial statements with a lot of what I would call unique events.
I think it basically boils down to a bandwidth issue.
So your Department of Ed audit the fiscal year ending 6/30, mm-hmm. we're not able to provide them with the financial statement audit.
No, it's not due until January 31st, is my understanding, of this year.
That's correct. Fiscal year end, July 31st, 6 months to the Department of Education after, which is July 31st.
You'll have them.
I'm sorry, which is January 31st.
Yeah, we're going to provide them for you as quickly as possible. And, Scott, I believe you mentioned the early part of February.
Yeah, we will have them done and filed with the Department of Education January 31st, so they'll come to the board quickly thereafter, first week of February.
Okay, I guess I was assuming they weren't ready for the first week of February, so I just wondered how you would need it.
Oh, okay, I understand. Okay, sorry.
Can you have a report due to the ABA in very early February also?
February 1st?
Yes.
And so the audited financials will be part of that report.
Well, on a supplemental basis, we've already notified the ABA, communicated the same message to the ABA that we've communicated to you, that we'll be supplementing the record with those statements shortly after February 1st.
Those financial statements, of course, I'm not an auditor, of course, but they exist in a draft form right now. They're just attempting to finalize them. And as someone who receives requests from the auditor, as a service provider for Summit, I can tell you that we have, because of all of the things going on, we have received updated requests as recently as the last 30 days from the auditor. So, again, I'm not the auditor, but I can tell you as an anecdotal matter that the auditor is still sending requests to providers. I did want to address two things, and I know we've taken quite a bit of time. The first one is I know that Mr. Lively and Dean Woolrich wanted to extend an invitation to the board members to come to the campus of the law school to see the number of changes that have occurred. If you've never been there before, it would, of course, be your first time, but if you have been there before, you could see the number of changes in terms of the consolidation of the services, consolidation of the space. And then the second item, as I mentioned in the opening, was that based upon these financial statements, we believe it would be warranted to revisit the bond amount. But I think that in the interest of both time and efficiency, that's probably a conversation that's better had when you have those in your hands, instead of just giving you, we're kind of giving you a preview of them. But once you have them in your hands, this microphone is crazy. We will revisit that question and probably at the next meeting we'll submit something in writing before that to try to get that question on the table. Is it me or is it kind of intermittent? Does it cut in and out? I can't tell. It sounds that way from this side.
Well, I think it's actually not necessary. And if you could hear me.
Yeah.
Most of us think that we have to be back on top of it.
Yeah.
I think if you sit back.
It's strange.
Just be as relaxed as I'm sure you already feel. it probably will sound better.
Sure.
Rumor has it these mics are very sensitive.
Okay. We're lucky we got to be the first users. Work out all the bugs for everyone else.
But in my perspective, it does behoove you to wait to make the request to revisit the bond.
Yeah, I agree. And then in terms of the invitation, if any members would like to visit the campus, you can reach out directly to the law school. Yeah, and
I'd like to add something to that. Recently, we lost one of our esteemed professors, Professor Michael D. Jones, formerly a Superior Court Judge Michael Jones. He passed away on December 31st of last year. And we have a new classroom courtroom in our consolidated space that we're going to be dedicating to Professor Jones, Judge Jones, and that would be a great time for you guys to come and visit. So I will make sure that you get an invitation to come and visit our campus, take a tour, and meet our students, and celebrate Judge Jones's life with us.
Thank you. Stefano, do you want to schedule the next time they have come for us?
And probably best that we go to the next
class. All right, then, she will.
Will be at home after the next class.
Thank you. Ms. Stefano will notify you when you get to come back and visit with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hold it for a second.
All right.
This is Scott Thompson. I'll also drop off now if there's no further questions.
Certainly.
Oh, well.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is licensing, the regular vocational program and regular degree granting license renewal for Brookline College.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. At the August 24th, 2017 meeting of the board, staff referred Brookline to you based upon the ACICS programmatic actions that had been taken. At that time, the board determined that Brookline is required to provide quarterly updates and appear before the board. The following information has been provided: the narrative summary of the pending programmatic actions and current status, the update regarding the progress towards accreditation with ABHES, quarterly in-house financial statements. At this time, Brookline is seeking renewal of the 2018 regular vocational program and degree granting license. they do have three campuses here in Arizona, and representing the institution, I believe, is Matthew Egan, and is Mr. Snyder here? No. And your board member lead is Mr. Dugan.
Mr. Snyder, would you care to make any opening remarks? We've all reviewed the packet.
Sure, please.
Mr. Snyder or Mr. Egan? Mr. Egan, I'm sorry. Mr. Snyder. Mr. Snyder on the phone? Or?
He is not, I'm sorry. We actually, Mr. Snyder, Ms. Raffaele, and Ms. Kodal, our CFO, all wanted to attend, but unfortunately, everyone has the flu today. Madam Chair, members of the board, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak to you regarding our renewal of our license. 2017 was an interesting year for Brookline College. We had a lot of actions that went on, including the actions that you're aware of with ACICS program level compliance warning. We have made significant improvement on those, as well as a few other programs that came in today, or I'm sorry, not today, but this year, earlier this month, having not met retention standards. So what we've done, most of those programs that we've had issues with were online programs. We have just hired a new dean of online for our online programs to focus primarily on retention in our online programs. In 2017, also the quarterly financial report that we have submitted to you shows that we do intend to post approximately a $350,000 loss for the year of 2017. However, we will post a composite score. We're anticipating at about 1.66. As soon as our board of directors became aware of the fact that we would be posting a loss for the year 2017, they did do a capital infusion of $450,000 to cover those losses. Some of the things that took place in 2017 that drove us towards those losses, we have been working with APES on initial accreditation once the department removed the approval for ACICS. So we had five different visits with APES. And so we did spend over $200,000 in fees for those, as well as costs associated, as well as many other additional soft costs. Another reason that we are posting a loss is prior to the December 2016 decision by the Department of Education to remove approval of ACICS, we had just signed a new lease in Albuquerque for our nursing program, and due to us being placed on a provisional program participation agreement because of the change in ACICS status, we were unable to move into that building requiring department approval, and so we've been unable to recognize the benefits that we thought we would have at that. However, we do still have the costs associated with it. So I do want to ask that due to some of those costs that weren't normal for us and the ability and reasoning of our board of directors and our ownership to consider and continue capital infusion in order to maintain solvency, I would ask that we remain on quarterly financial reporting with you. We've also had a very strong beginning to our year and anticipate having very strong results in the first quarter.
Thank you. I do have a few questions.
Sure.
Just to ease my mind, it didn't appear that the Department of Education in the final program review took any adverse action. Please confirm that.
Sure. There wasn't an adverse action by the department. The review for two of the findings regarding the annual security report and the statements, missing policy statements in the annual security report, was referred to the Administrative Appeals and Actions Group. And so we do await confirmation from
you're
them.
You're still awaiting that?
Correct.
Okay. What do you think the likelihood of an adverse action would be?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
That's currently very common, the findings for those two things. It goes to a completely different group, and it takes some time to get an answer and didn't have any answers.
I noticed that you brought that up last month, that it was kind of common, for those particular two findings.
And they may very well find them that it is very common for them to find them, depending on how egregious they decide that they were.
But it's not a financial implication, according to what I understand.
In the other, they may be fine.
Okay.
So I know that would be. the extent of it, but the other findings, it sounded like there was some back and forth that could be updated in the COD records, but ultimately that was all resolved.
Correct.
There's no update on these. So you will notify us as soon as you hear any update on these findings.
Correct. Yes, absolutely.
I was three campuses in Arizona, and then I was comparing the three campuses to the total. And it appears to me that the total revenue for the three Arizona campuses of about $27.8 million, it doesn't exactly jive with the total parent financials, and this is for 16 of $33.9 million. So there's about a $5 million difference, $6 million. And but if we go to 17, it looks like they're practically equal. In other words, the three Arizona locations make up practically the total. Help me understand the difference. Was it the Albuquerque situation, or what was the situation between 2016 and 2017 that brought the parent essentially to the same level or the same level as the three Arizona locations?
Sure. The Albuquerque location declined approximately 40% in population, and so certainly there's a correlation to the revenue decline there. So the Arizona campuses do make up the majority of the revenue for our institution.
The most recent statement that we have current in-house is 8/31/17. And it shows that the Arizona revenue is $20.3 million versus $21.8 for the parent, so it's only $1.5 million off or so. So where is that other $1.5 million? Is that still in New Mexico?
Yes, that would be in New Mexico.
Okay.
Yes. And I do want to point out, too, that this is the first time in over 4 years that we've posted, in 4 years, rather, that we've posted a loss in a consolidated level.
Yes, I see that the Arizona had a positive net income for the 8/31 period, for the period ending 8/31, a positive net income of almost $2.3 million, but the parent was $1 million loss. And is that still because of Albuquerque?
Yes.
That's essentially the Albuquerque location taking a lot of expense without very much revenue.
Yes. That is a significant portion of it, as well as some outside of the Arizona campuses. We do have some overhead and administrative staff as well.
Are those administrative locations here in Arizona, or where is the administrative location?
They are here in Arizona.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And what's the future for the New Mexico operation? What do you intend to do there?
Sure. As soon as we complete our institutional accreditation with APES, we had our site as an approved learning site for our nursing program. It had been approved by ACICS. We did make it a part of our application for initial accreditation with APES as a learning site as well. And so at that point, once we receive initial accreditation, we get placed on a normal program participation agreement as well, and not provisional, then we'll be able to open that location and start our nursing program in that location. Move our nursing work
to that location.
You're assuming that when you, if you get the APES approval, you will also be taken off provisional?
Yes.
You got an assurance of that?
I've gotten indicators that is once we do have institutional accreditation, because the only reason we were placed on a provisional was because of the ACICS situation, that we would indeed be able to then put an application and move in a rather expedited fashion into a normal PPA.
Your finances at that point could trigger a different reason for the application.
Except that we've always maintained a composite score above 1.5.
The latest numbers, sake of the board, is roughly 1,500 students in Arizona in three locations. Appears to be about the right number.
Yeah, about that. Yes.
So that's about what we have, to be concerned about is 1,500
sure.
students. It's quite a large number for us. I must tell you.
Agreed.
Um, Let's see, my next question really has to do with the audited statements. Naturally, your current ratio is some cause for concern. It's barely, it's hovering right around one, according to the 2016 statements. It does appear that it improved somewhat in 2017 year to date. Is that accurate?
The ratio that you're referring to?
Current ratio.
Oh, current ratio. Yes. No, that is accurate.
Okay. And I was pleased to see, as you said, that you're above 1.6 for the composite score. And it also appears that your published default rate is comfortable at 11.6. Is that still accurate?
Yes.
And you appear to be okay on 90-10 still? It looks like it was about 80.
Yeah, we're expecting around 82% for 2017.
Okay, so that piece appears to be okay. And you answered my question about Albuquerque. You answered that question. And you answered my revenue questions. It appears that your revenue shortfall is about 16 to 20% of your total. You know, it's down about 16 to 20%, depending upon which time period you measure, and obviously that's impacting all of your financials. Those are the only questions I have, Manager.
Your new campus director for Phoenix, the letter saying that the
president. Oh, I apologize. I'll get that to you right away.
And there also was that the Tucson campus director left as well. Has that position been replaced?
Yes, Mr. Antonio Thompson, who was previously our Tempe campus director, moved into that role in, I believe, the third quarter of 2017. I'd have to verify that date for you.
So he had been the Tempe?
Correct.
So someone replaced him in Tempe?
Yes. Our previous Vice President of Academics, Janet Melton, is the campus director at Tempe now.
Can you give us a summary of your three APHAS visits last September?
Sure.
I'm sure you've gotten results.
Yeah, absolutely. Our APHAS visits in September, we had in our visit in Tucson, we had one violation of the standard, which was a form at our clinical experience that was being signed by our instructor instead of the clinical instructor, so we remediated that and sent our response for that. At our Tempe campus, we had three violations that involved online distance education learning and the monitoring. So we put a new monitoring process as well as a part of hiring of our new dean of online. In Phoenix, we had similar issues. We had in Phoenix, we had some distance education standards that we had to do remediation for as far as the processes that we use for monitoring student interaction and substantive interaction with our instructors. As part of that remediation, we did put in the new dean of online, as I mentioned, and just kind of covered all of the campuses since we do have some students at each campus that do distance education. And so also what we did in the Phoenix campus, we also were asked to extend and actually beef up the rigor in our Master's of Science in Nursing program. FS is newly able to grant permission for graduate degrees, so it's my understanding that they're looking very closely at those with good intentions. And so what we did was we worked on the rigor and added some additional rigor to our Master's of Science in Nursing program. And those were the main points at our visits in the APHAS. So we did submit all of our responses. We had a third-party consulting firm that we worked through the whole process with. And we were in front of the APHAS Commission at their January meeting. And we've been told we will get a response the first week of February.
Okay. Thank you.
You had an opportunity to do a little bragging rights in 2014.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. And we also, I do want to point out, in 2017, in May, with a visit from the Arizona State Board of Nursing, it ended our 18-month consent agreement that we had with the Arizona State Board of Nursing, and we were given a new 3-year approval.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Egan, I'm concerned because of the magnitude of the number of, you know, the number of students in Arizona, and heretofore you've not been required to post a bond, and according to the staff recommendation, and I agree with it, we need to have you post a bond as a part of a consent agreement with us as a condition of licensure. So my motion would be that we approve the renewal of your license, subject to you agreeing to some additional conditions, which would be a bond in the amount of, it's quite substantial, it's $3.3 million, and it's calculated on a standard basis that we consider for every institution that is at some risk like this. In addition, we would like you to agree to monthly reporting on your student status to us and continue quarterly reporting. So that is my motion, but you will have to agree before we reissue the license to the requirements.
Sure.
That's a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
So do you agree to those terms, or do you need to confer with others?
I do agree to the terms.
Okay. Any further discussion? And motion second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
The next item on the is the regular juvenile license renewals for Penn Foster.
Madam Chair, members of the board, Penn Foster College has been licensed by the board since October 2005, and they are also accredited by DEAC through January of 2020. At this time, Penn Foster is seeking renewal of the 2018 regular vocational degree granting license renewal. During the review of the financial statement, staff noted that Penn Foster has had a loss for the last 2 years. So accordingly, based upon our policy and standard, the renewal has been referred to the board for discussion and action. The information that staff requested was received by Penn Foster and is provided to you. And your board member lead is Mr. Jacob.
Would step forward, please. Thank you. Would you mind stating your name and position for the record?
Sure. My name is James Baker. I'm the corporate controller for Penn Foster. I've been there since September of 2015.
My name is Heather McAllister. I'm the general counsel and corporate secretary for Penn Foster, and I've been with the company since February of 16.
I think we have a colleague on the line as well.
Keep online.
Yes, Rebecca McGovern. I'm the senior manager of regulatory outcomes, and I have been with Penn Foster since November 2015.
Mr. Baker joining us? I'm sorry,
Mr. Britt?
Mr. Britt.
Mr. Britt on the phone? No?
It has a transcript.
No,
he's here saying Mr. Britt was supposed to be in present. Mr. Baker was supposed to be on the phone. Sorry.
All right. I have bad words.
Would you like to make an opening statement?
Yes. Thank you. We're pleased to be here to answer any questions that you have regarding our financial conditions. As Terry had mentioned, we've provided some supporting schedules, which we hope are responsive to your concerns. And should you have anything else, be happy to try to answer as best we can.
Okay. Well, the financial situation is a concern. Looking at the situation, I appreciate the steps you've been taking and the indications you've written here as far as what's been going on. Can you go into some detail as far as the steps taken, such as the cost-cutting measures, your vendor relationships, and other support costs?
Regarding the cost-cutting measures in terms of our cost to serve, we have been consolidating a number of our textbooks with a few strategic vendors to ensure that we're getting the best volume discounts for a particular course or curriculum. And that's been quite successful in terms of consolidating vendors and also getting better service. As we've, one of the things that we invested in 2015 was a new learning management system, and we've made extensive investments in that to make our platform mobile and provide a better engine for our students to learn. That's allowed us to achieve some administrative and support savings as a result of that new system and that new platform.
Okay. Talk to me about the, you made a statement about the gap loss ignores your financial strengths and historical improvements. You know, based on what you're forecasting for 2017 as far as your a loss of $7 million, when are we going to see the tables turn, and what is 18 forecasted to be like?
18 forecast is should be included as with part of your package, and one of the things I'd like to talk about is the gap loss includes a couple of non-cash deductions for goodwill amortization. That is a gap elective that was made in 2014. So that's about a $6 million amortization expense related to goodwill. In addition to that, we've got some intangible amortizations related to trademarks and course content, which are about $4 million. So in total, those two items alone are non-cash items, and they're driving essentially a large part of the net gap loss. When you look at our gap statements and also the financials that we provided, you'll see that we're generating a lot of cash from operations.
Sure.
So the gap election that was made in 2014, that $6 million expense is going to continue for 10 years until that's entirely gone. So understanding that while that's an expense on our P&L, it's not impacting our liquidity, and it's not impacting our ability to serve students or our overall operations. Same is true for the intangibles as well, the trademark names, Penn Foster, International Correspondence Schools. While we're amortizing those for GAAP purposes, and that's in accordance with GAAP and required, they're non-cash items that don't impact our ability to pay our bills or to service our students.
Okay. That's all the questions I have. With that, I'll make a motion to approve the regular vocational and degree granting license renewal with stipulations that the $52,044 surety bond be maintained and quarterly reporting, please.
Second.
Do you accept the conditions?
Pardon?
Do you accept the conditions?
Is it necessary for us to have quarterly reporting? Currently, we're on annual reporting.
Well, I would, Madam Chair, I would prefer quarterly reporting until we see, maybe for the first two quarters of 18, until we see.
They have not been on quarterly before, but it was my question or suggestion rather that they should be on quarterly.
So the motion is to maintain the bond at $52,044 and begin quarterly reporting?
Right.
Can I ask him, did you, the bond calculation was a little lower than 52.
Right.
I think in a conversation that we had earlier this week.
Yes, the bond.
You revised or you have a new bond based upon the new calculation. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. The new calculation, the prior bond was $52,044. The new bond is $50,499. And I have that rider here, so I have that taken care of.
No, the new calculation, the 52,044 was what was based upon last year. The new calculation, it went down
49.
Very little, but down to
$50,499.
So the bond is currently $50,000.
So we have
the new one. The new one.
We have a bond. Do you want to modify your
The motion making the surety bond $50,499.
And I'll agree on the second. I made the second, and I agree the second. He modified the motion. I agree with Mr. Jacob that at least for a short period of time, we would like to see quarterly reporting until we see some improvement. I'm okay with not the whole year. But, you know, a couple of quarters would be good with me, too, if that's what.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll say quarterly reporting for two quarters. At least
quarters?
Until we see.
Could you get us a question?
Sure, we can. I mean, at this point, I just want to state that the goodwill amortization and the intangibles, which are driving our net losses, will continue. I mean, those are accounting elections that were made in 2014 that won't change. So when I look at our operating cash flows and I look at our ability to protect our students, as well as the fact that we actually have a smaller bond requirement now based on our requirements, I just want to make sure the board is understanding that, you know, it's likely that we will show operating cash flows positive, but still a gap loss. And that's you know, that will not probably change in the short term.
Understand, sir. And the big concern is that we see those operating cash flows.
Perfect.
I agree with that. I'm not concerned about those gap questions. Okay. Understand those are non-cash issues. Want to see the current
sure.
ratios and what the cash flow looks like.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Yes, you agree?
Yes.
All right. Is there a motion and a second? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, the next item on the agenda is the regular vocational program license renewal for Barbizon of Tucson, Barbizon of Phoenix.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board, Barbizon of Tucson and Barbizon of Phoenix is seeking renewal of their 2018 regular vocational program license. Again, during our review of the renewal and the financial statement, staff had concerns regarding the two-year losses and is referring the renewal to the board. Barbizon has been licensed by the board since 1997, and we have not had any complaints filed. Barbizon submitted December 2017 financials for both institutions, the two-year projections, and its plan to improve. The board member agreed with Mr. Lukey that he is ill, and Mr. Dugan agreed to act as lead.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Would you care to make any opening statements?
Yes. I'm June Hutchinson, president of Barbizon of Phoenix and Tucson. I'm here to answer any questions regarding the financial position of Barbizon.
Okay.
Thank you.
My first comment is that at least I was pleased to see the change from 2016 to 2017.
Yes.
The 2016 current ratio, which we all study pretty heavily because it has so much impact on your daily cash flow, obviously, was weak, obviously.
Yes.
You've gone through some real changes there. At least in 2017, it's improved considerably. You've got current assets about three times your current liabilities, or thereabouts, almost four times. So that's quite an improvement. So we're pleased to see that. It appears to me that Phoenix is considerably bigger than Tucson, about three times the size.
Yes.
The total expense for Tucson is what's driving the total overall financials. So help me understand what you're doing about that right now. How do you intend to get the Tucson campus more in line with the Phoenix campus? What's the situation?
I think there's a couple things. We moved in 2016 to a smaller facility, so the rent's considerably less. Staffing, I've changed some staffing requirements because it's had a lot of people in that office because it was originally the only office in Arizona. So when we came up to Phoenix, there might be an allocation issue too. People work out of both places,
and the expense is showing in Tucson. So I think it just needs to be clarified and reclassified to be in the proper place.
That is kind of ironic that you started in Tucson.
I know.
And now Phoenix has overtaken Tucson
exactly.
by considerable.
I mean, I think it's basically population driven. You know, there's just a lot more people here.
And tell me, you mentioned Colorado here once. What's going on with Colorado? I saw that in here.
We have an office in Colorado. It's been since 2011, and it's a separate company, but the financial flows into the parent company because this is an S corporation.
Because it doesn't look like Colorado was very much of the parent at all. Is that accurate?
What do you mean?
How much does Colorado contribute or detract from the total parent in terms of revenue?
It doesn't cash flow-wise. It's totally separate cash flow. It's just at the end of the year for tax purposes. It's been a profitable. That flows into the parent company.
Okay.
Yeah, but cash flow-wise, it doesn't affect it.
Okay.
Can I address the loss in the 2 years?
Sure.
Okay.
Please do.
So end of 2014, we started operating in North Carolina, and so it was 2015 and 2016, and it was bought out in 2016. It wrote off a loss of $192,000 in 2016.
I noticed that.
So that is primarily where the loss came from.
Okay. That was my next question, is the $192,000 is a non-recurring situation
right.
from North Carolina.
Right.
But it appears that, for example, Phoenix is positive by $162,000 in 2017.
Yes.
And Tucson is still struggling, but you've made some changes down there with regard
yes.
to the expense, so you don't expect that to continue. And finally, your two-year projections, they look reasonable to me based upon where you are right now. It's not pie in the sky. It
right.
looks like that's achievable based upon what you're doing right now. You're not anticipating that that your revenue would go up substantially, nor your expenses.
No.
So you get a little better expense control, perhaps, than you've had in the past. Those are all my questions. I will warn you that I'm going to ask for a higher bond just because of the situation that it's in.
Okay. I have some questions. Do you have a registration fee?
Down payment.
Down payment is something different, but do you actually have a registration fee?
No. I mean, it's kind of the same thing for us.
So the rules allow for a school to keep a registration fee or cancellation fee if the student cancels after 3 days and before the start of classes.
Right.
Your policy asks for $295 down payment, which is fine, but then you keep that full $295 should the student not start, and that is not in compliance.
Okay.
So the most you can keep is $200.
Okay.
So we'll need for you to revise that refund policy and submit it for it to be reviewed before the license is renewed.
Okay.
Your catalog is the briefest I think I've ever seen. Very short. And your admissions policy is so vague, I could not follow it. You basically say, it's by individual. You know, typically, we don't accept high school dropouts or those who have a federal record. But, you know what, maybe we will, maybe we won't. We don't care how old you are, maybe. You can have whatever admissions requirements you want, but they need to be clear. You can have some wiggle room to allow yourself to admit some people that, you know, maybe don't meet what you normally would meet. But this vague is so vague that I feel like if I happen to have a charming 2-year-old daughter that I want to put forward, she could get into your school. So you also need to revise your admissions policy to make it clear that it is, in fact, a post-secondary education. And whatever age you can ask for, whether you do or do not require the high school's diploma, since you're not federally not required, but you need to have something that shows the minimum of their beyond the age of compulsory attendance. Beyond the age of compulsory attendance in Arizona, you can't take 2 years. And then I was very concerned about your placement assistance. You mentioned, honestly, the sentence is not grammatical, so it's a little hard to follow, but you say that you accept several students for personal development only, which means they are not entitled to placement in the Barbizon agency, our placement aid. So I assume that's saying that if you make an exception to allow people to come in, they're not entitled to placement with the Barbizon agency, but is the Barbizon agency a completely separate company?
Yes.
So it isn't clear then whether you as a school have provide placement in your report. You have NA as your placement. So that is also too vague. So you have a whole bunch of vagueness all in one paragraph on page 2 of the catalog.
Okay.
I guess I would just point out that it looks like your retention rate and graduation rate is acceptable.
Yeah.
And 100% at both campuses.
We don't, yeah, we don't have many people, or we don't have people fall out generally.
Do you know any of these policies?
Yes.
Still have a sample, so you can just.
Okay, thank you.
Kate, in the plans for 18 and 19, you have revenue attributed to Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, I think you also say that you're not expecting expenses in Colorado. Is that correct?
I mean,
it says expenses need to be analyzed. Make sure Colorado expenses are not included in the Arizona financial statement.
Yeah, they're not.
I would make a motion that we approve the regular vocational program license renewal application for Barbizon College campuses in Arizona, subject to the condition that you agree to the new surety bond, which is $126,719, according to our calculation, which is standard procedure that we use.
Okay.
And that future financial statements must be compiled according to GAAP, G-A-A-P, the general accounting principles. And I would suggest that, just like the previous applicant, that because of the financial condition, we at least look for quarterly reporting for a couple of quarters in the new year until we're satisfied that the expenses are down according to what you projected. So that's my motion, and you would have to agree to those conditions. Oh, I'm sorry. And, of course, the catalog changes that our chair mentioned.
I agree.
You have to make those. And that would be in my motion as well.
Yeah,
second.
Do you agree to the
motion? Yes.
All right. So we have a motion and a second. Not all those there say aye.
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 Aye. If you'd submit those changes to the staff, though, you can.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Next item on the agenda is the regular vocational program license renewal for Yoga Connection.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board, Yoga Connection is seeking renewal of their 2018 regular vocational program license. During the review of the financial statements, part of the license renewal staff was concerned regarding the 2 years of losses and is referring this renewal to you for review for discussion and action. Yoga Connection has been licensed by the board since 2009, and we have not had any complaints. And if you'll recall, in 2016, the yoga teacher training programs became exempt from licensure. However, Yoga Connection was I think the only one who eventually chose, because they were given the option, chose to remain licensed. And your board member lead is Dr. Mittman.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
Did you guys introduce yourselves?
Thank you. My name is Priscilla Potter, and I'm the director of the Yoga Connection.
I'm Joanna Smith. I'm the bookkeeper.
The more important person.
Would you like to start with an update or
thank you.
An introductory
I think Terry did a nice job for me in that we've been licensed by the state since 2009. And when we were given the option of not being licensed, we chose to continue to be licensed for a couple of reasons. Primarily, because by being licensed by the state, we are able to be certified by the VA, which allows GIs to use their GI benefits to take our programs. And that is a very strong part of our mission statement as a nonprofit to serve the underserved and individuals like the military. So I welcome your questions and thank you.
Thanks. I have another question. How many yoga teacher training programs are not-for-profit versus for-profit? Do you know?
It seems in Tucson or in Arizona?
Well, just in general, and let's say in Arizona.
Very
or in
few.
Tucson,
I think we're the only nonprofit.
So, just out of curiosity, because I know that your improvement plan over the next couple of years relies on development or fundraising.
That's right? Correct.
Important for a nonprofit. So I'm just wondering, similar to the reason of why you chose to remain licensed, why did you choose to be a nonprofit, contrary to practically everybody else in the field? Well,
that's a really good question. And I primarily was following my teacher's model, who had established a center a long time ago in Chicago. And I applied for the nonprofit, I think, back in early 90s as a religious organization, because yoga is not only a stretchy, bendy process, but for some people it has a spiritual aspect to it also. And so we went for the nonprofit as a religious organization as opposed to educational organization with a long-term vision of at some point also running a seminary. We were able to do the religious nonprofit because I'm ordained in the yoga tradition. But you can call me Priscilla.
But we could call you Swami if we wanted to. That would be a first, so I might pick up on that.
And just a little embarrassing.
So here's I think the reason that you're here this year as opposed to in previous years is because of the losses.
Correct.
Number one. And the current ratio, which is your available funds.
Correct.
And access within a year relative to the amount that you expect to pay in the course of the next 12 months is roughly one-third. And usually we like to see that 2-to-1, mm-hmm. Or it's a third to one.
Okay.
And so you presented some projections and
correct.
A plan. And can you walk the board through how and I guess rather than start, I guess it seems very ambitious. So you're looking at roughly $200,000 of revenue in this past fiscal year, right, for yoga teacher training instruction or tuition, and your plan is to increase it to $300,000. So it's almost a 50% increase in in tuition. And then the other piece that I have, well, why don't we start with that? So go ahead and address that.
Okay, thank you. So there have been years when the income has been in that area, and actually in my cover letter I indicated that having realized at the end of the last fiscal year that the finances were not quite where we wanted them to be, we already began to put in measures in terms of student recruitment and PR, and I think our last quarter was stronger, and you'll see our first quarter of this year is also stronger. We have a number of programs that we offer each year, and every other year we offer the advanced training, of which we're starting one in the spring of this year, and that generates a fair bit of income. And so we have four programs beginning this year, and we're putting, as I said, we realized the income was low, so we're just putting a little more effort and energy into student recruitment through various means. Social media, we've got somebody hired to help with that, and we've upgraded our website and things like that. And we also, as I said, we do outreach for the people that are coming in under the GI Bill. And so we're, just basically promotions and a bit of optimism.
Do you have corresponding plans to adjust your expenses in case the projections do not?
No, I appreciate that question. We certainly have looked at our expenses, and we've already, made some, adjustments. We're promoting also, because of the nonprofit status, volunteerism, and that's been really helpful. And I don't have anything in writing, but I had a meeting with our leasing agent, and they so much want us to stay in that space because our lease is up the end of October of this year, and so we're already in verbal negotiations, and they're looking at, she made a verbal commitment to reduce our rent, which is like phenomenal. I think she said between $200 and $300 a month. So we certainly look at expenses. We're not overstaffed by any means, et cetera. Is that helpful?
Sure. You mentioned fundraising.
Correct.
So I have to say that the fundraising plan is extensive, but not proportionally as ambitious as the increase in tuition. So you bring in about $15,000 a year, or this past year, in fundraising. The goal is to increase it to, I think, $31,000.
Yeah, fundraising is hard.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have a very detailed, with lots of steps, personal solicitations, several events, direct mail. You don't have a fundraising staff person.
Well, I
guess the reason that I'm saying this is that for an additional $16,000, it seems like a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
Relative to your main, kind of your core yoga business.
Correct.
Is, teaching yoga instructors, right? I guess I'm just saying that, it's your school, but to put that much work into fundraising for a relatively small amount, your loss was only $25,000 this past year. So to put all of the steps and fundraising events that don't really have, you didn't have the expenses attached to the events. You know, you had revenue projections, but events take a lot of time. They cost money to put on.
That's a really good point.
Potentially, it's a nice thing to raise money, but you know, I assume that your main expertise is in yoga instruction.
It is. It totally is.
Okay. Any other questions from the...
And I appreciate those comments. I really do. From somebody from the, you know, the outside looking at it. Thank you.
Just a quick question. I was looking at a catalog, and your required texts, you're saying the 17 different required texts that they need to purchase?
That's for the advanced program.
And you estimated the cost of like $300, and I don't know if that's very realistic for purchasing 17 texts.
Well, I think they're not, because I have a son who's in Pima Community College, and yoga texts aren't as much as college textbooks are.
Well, I just happened to look up one of them from Mr. Weiss, and it was like $40.
He's the expensive one.
And the first one on the list was $15.
Yeah,
so
Steve is self-published, so he can get away with that.
Just be careful what you put in your catalog as an estimate that is accurate.
Yeah, we'll double-check that. That's a good point. Thank you.
Yeah, they're all around $10 to $20, except for Steve Weiss's book. So we calculate it out, and it's an accurate number in there.
Okay.
We update it every year if we need to. Matt, any questions from
you? No. Based on the staff's recommendation, I'd like to make a motion to approve the regular vocational program license renewal application with the stipulation to maintain the $15,000 surety bond.
A second. So do you agree to maintain the bond?
Thank you very much, yes.
And before we go, I just want to say thank you for continuing to be licensed. It is always a pleasure to have somebody realize the value of the licensing and enrolling that supervisor.
Well, in all honesty, when we first were required to do it, I wasn't feeling very generous about it, but I have come to really know and appreciate the board members, and they've been really helpful on many occasions, and I do appreciate that. And today, too, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay.
Thanks so much.
The next order of business is the conditional to regular vocational program license renewal for the Institute of Applied Medicine.
Oh, I see.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. At the October 27th meeting of the board, the board approved the conditional vocational program license for the Institute of Applied Meditation with the stipulations to maintain the $15,000 surety bond, entered into a consent agreement regarding the $1,000 civil penalty for operating without a license. And as you can see, there were several revisions that were required in the catalog and enrollment agreement. They are now seeking renewal of the conditional to regular vocational program license. And as you know, this is a very unique program. I guess one of my questions was there on the financial statements, there weren't other assets than cash and no liabilities. I thought that was pretty unusual. Anyway. And your board member lead is Ms. Leonard.
You can all introduce yourself, please.
Dee O'Neill, board member.
Steve Olson, chairman of the board.
Christine Olson, board member.
Also, Steve and Christine were part of the faculty for this program.
And our Susanna and
Ron are our founders of the Institute, and they also teach the program, yes.
Are they on phone today, or in person?
We have brought them down here. Their schedules are so unbelievable.
We just had them on the list.
And actually, Susanna's also been sick, so.
If you'd like to make an opening statement.
The only opening statement I'd like to make is to let you guys know what a phenomenal staff you've got. They have been absolutely through this entire process. We started 2 years ago and got conditional and now renewal. Extremely helpful. I have really appreciated it because when you spend hours trying to find something in the regs and they can just send it to you like that. Oh, bless them. Answer your questions.
Last time the list was long that we sent you off with your homework, and from my perspective, the list is shorter this time. But that is part of going through the process, continually tweaking things to add clarity to them. So on your refund policy, you have no refund exactly at 50%. So you have it less than 50 and you have it over 50, but we're going to refund you at 50. And page 9 or catalog. Mm-hmm. Oh no, that one says that's equal to 50, so I think I said it somewhere else.
40 to 50%. In the enrollment agreement, it's 5 to 7, but it looks to be okay on that one too. If it's
yeah,
over
40%.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I wrote the notes and I typed them up later, so I definitely could have misread what I was talking about. Oh, apparently I couldn't read my own handwriting. Good. That's out right off then. I have that the leave of absence was confusing. This just might be my own ignorance. You say you return at the same calendar point. Does that mean like literally in the calendar of like January to October, or does it mean within the calendar of the classes?
The latter. We don't. We started in January and finished in 18 months later. And that doesn't always mean that we would start in January. We might start in September, so.
Okay. You don't have to, but you might want to think about putting in there something about the class schedule or something. I just ended up wondering, like, well, so if they left in January, they come back in January, it's odd, but. And is there any limit to how many leave of absences they can take? Because you don't say anything, so that would be presumably there aren't any. For admissions, I didn't see any reference of a minimum age or whether you require high school graduation or not. I don't have to, but you need to make a comment on whether you do anything that require high school.
We talked about this when we came here initially.
Likely.
There is no minimum at this time.
Since it's supposed to be great, you do need to have a minimum age. So putting in a specification that they have to be at least above the minimum age compulsory attendance, and you can say that last year's home is not invited. And then in your grievance policy, you flip back and forth, and I think probably you were revising it and didn't follow it all the way through. In some places you specifically say working days, in other places you say days. So I've been wondering if they were two different phrases. So usually in a policy, it is good to have it as school days, working days. But you do flip back and forth. So if you just go through and look at it, and every place it says just days all by itself, either do one whole thing that just say days are referencing to working days, or in every place you say days, put in working. Either of those will back.
A couple of questions. In let's Until I meditated this month. On the financial statements, talks about trustee equity. And could you explain, because the institute is a 501c3, correct?
Correct.
And so on the financial statements dated August 31st, it has trustee equity. What is that? What does that mean?
Could you repeat that? I'm having difficulty
hearing you. Hearing you.
Do you have a copy of your financial statements?
I have to apologize. That one.
All right, we could give it to you. Okay.
It got sent from our treasurer in California.
Yeah.
And then I took my copy and put it in my financial file, but not in the relicensing file.
Fine. So I'm just trying to understand equity, if it were a privately owned for-profit, that would make sense to me. So I'm trying to understand the $11,700. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's in either some notes.
Our accountant, not our treasurer.
Do you know of anybody, like any trustees? Truby or trustees?
Yes, we're trustees.
Who have equity in the.
There is no equity Institute. By any of the trustees or the directors.
I'm wondering, there was. The founders originally have put in a sizable amount of their own funds.
Okay.
That might be part of that, but we can certainly find out for you and let you know.
Okay. But also, I think there's a mistake on the website because it lists all these papers. It lists the, what's the founder's last name?
Bear.
The Bears as owner.
The list, no.
Be incorrect.
Yeah. No, they're not owners. On our website?
Yeah, on the.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I think that's just a technicality.
Okay.
But it's kind of odd that there's the equity piece and then there's the other piece there. And then
they probably feel like owners with the amount of work they put in, but no, they're not.
Okay. And then a lot of the program is online, correct?
Yes.
And so are all of your students, trying to think how many students, you have 45 students?
Yes.
And are they all here in Arizona, or they could be anywhere?
All over the world.
All over the world.
Yeah. Germany, Austria. New England, Britain, yeah. We do have every year in the program, we have what we call a residency where everybody meets, it's required that they attend, and we have education during a two-week period where we're all together. Yeah, so that happens twice for the 18 months.
Okay. And I'm not sure. I assume that this is not a SARA requirement or any other licensure in other states.
Okay. Have you thought about it?
I don't know. I know that if it's a degree granting,
they wouldn't be eligible for SARA.
Okay. But it's not required to be licensed in other states.
They may very well be. For instance, do you have a student in Wisconsin?
No.
Okay, good answer. How about Texas? He lives in Texas.
Yes.
That's not a whole lot.
Texas is, I think, one of the other states that isn't defined by physical presence like we are. It's defined by the student.
residency?
We aren't necessarily experts on other states, although everybody here has some knowledge about it. It would behoove you to look at the addresses where your current students are and any places where you are advertising and looking to get students, and then check with the state licensing agencies in those states to be sure you have not blurred a line there. Some of them have different rules about who has to be licensed, and some it can just be based on if you're advertising there, that might do it. Some of you have employees there, some of students live there. It just, there's all different rules, and there is this organization called SARA that helps put it all in one bucket, but you don't qualify for that country, so you have to figure it out on your own.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I did find it. It was, in fact, my penmanship that was the problem. It goes here. In the catalog on page 910 and the enrollment agreement on 4-7, there's a paragraph where you say that if a student chooses to withdraw from the union program honor after class start, but prior to completing 50%, tuition will be refunded on prorated, and it's actually through 50%. Or you actually have to make a refund of 50%. And then in the 10% module, the percent of the program elapsed under section 2B says if less than 10% of the program, refund 90, and the next line says if more than 10%.
Can you tell me where you are again? I'm not finding
yes.
it. So I can mark it.
On page, do you have the catalog there? Or the EA?
Yes.
Okay, on page 910. It's bolded. It says refund after commencement of classes. And the sentence underneath says, if the student chooses to withdraw from the union program on or after the class start date, but prior to completing 50%, tuition will be refunded on a prorated basis. It would be through 50%. So if they complete exactly 50%, you would, in fact, make a refund, where this says you will not make a refund for 50% and on. And then the next part is a little bit farther down where the little grid is, where it has percent of program elapsed and then tuition refund amount. The first line says if less than 10% of the programs elapsed, you refund 90%. If more than 10%, but less or equal to 20, you do 80. So you don't say what happens at 10%.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
I wasn't willing to admit to a mistake, but I thought I was so specific about writing that up.
Okay. Glad you found it for us. Thank you.
Anyone else? All right. Then I make a motion to approve the conditional to regular vocational program license renewal application with a stipulation to increase the surety bond to $39,200 and to make those two adjustments to your refund.
Second.
Motion and second. Do you agree to those stipulations?
So the bond needs to go to $39,200 instead of the $15,000. Is that?
Yes, we agree.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sent me that statute. Yeah, and then I have a book of all the regulatory agencies. It's 2011, so the names have changed, but the numbers and everything are the same.
I'll email that to you.
You're welcome.
Our lunch is wrapped, and I guess the lunch is not. I've told you to do that. Great. Thanks. All right.
We could do it after lunch if it's here. Maybe I told him 12. Not in 30 minutes, but I don't know.
If that's you, do you want to do one more and stay down?
Up to you. Sure.
I can text him. Go ahead.
Yes. All right, so it's a lucky day for the next school, so we're going to do one more for the next one is the additional to regular education program license renewal for WIU.
WIU. Morning, everyone. I like your new location, by the way.
Pardon?
I like your new location.
Yes, much nicer. A little more complicated getting in.
Yes, I was a little turned around. There was a motorcycle accident right on the street here, too. Yes, it's WIU, formerly Coder Camps. We did a name change in October. The school is now in partnership with Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple. That Apple, yes. And he was out in October to announce the name change and sort of the new mission of the school. And I apologize, our CFO has the flu, and we didn't think it was good for him to come in.
That's a common thing today, and we appreciate all of those who did not come.
Yes, I really appreciated it because I'm just getting past it.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board, at your October 2016 meeting, the board approved the conditional vocational program license for, at that point in time, Coder Camps, with the stipulation to maintain the $50,000 surety bond, and there were several revisions that were required. As Ms. Murphy said, in October 2017, there was a press release that WIU was launched, and we had, Shelley and Keith and I had several conversations. It was a little premature, but I think we're all on the same page now. The change of name they applied for was received and approved. The enrollment agreement and catalog reflect the new name. And the board member lead is Mr. Dugan.
That's a quick pitch. So the main announcement, I read that article too, and I thought that was good.
So agree. Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, the PR piece that went out wasn't run through myself or some of the executive team, and I think it just created a perception that this was a new school, when in fact the event was really about launching the school and what the model will be, and no locations. Only that the future home of the accelerator, which will be built, which is unique to Arizona, will be here. We had spent the last year on probably every state asking for the accelerator to be built in that state. And we kept it very confidential that we would be selecting Arizona for the accelerator. So the event was to announce that the school would be here. Which is huge for us to have that here. Nothing more than I could say than media and miscommunication, and both Terry and Keith were amazing in working with us and trying to get that cleared up and in the right direction. So thank you very much.
I was a bit crabby, though. I will tell you that.
What's that?
I was a bit crabby.
No, you were great. We're really excited about it, though. Really, really excited about the whole thing.
Thank you for being here. Would you please identify yourself first?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Shelley Murphy, and I am over regulatory and government affairs and corporate relations for WIU as well.
Okay. Would you care to make any more of an opening statement, or is that about as much you wanted to say to open?
Yes, and I apologize. That was just kind of it. I wanted to explain we were the Coder and the WIU, and I would definitely echo opening remarks from prior. The staff is amazing to work with, very responsive, a lot of support, and good communication. So.
Thank you. I was concerned, based upon your package here, about your placement rate. That's unusual for folks in technology to experience a placement rate of about 41%. Would you care to comment on that? Why do you think that's as low as it is?
Well,
that was in 2016, by the way, obviously.
Yeah, we were new, and we we're redesigning a lot of curriculum, so we kind of backed down on enrollment so that we could be sure that the students we were bringing in, we were able to place. Our placement rates are actually much, much greater now. So I'm not sure on that number, and I apologize. I tried to download the application, but I can't get it to come through. But I can give you a follow-up explanation. I'm surprised that it says 40 on there. I know our classes were smaller, and we were sort of testing the waters on that, but they're generally, in technology, much, much higher. So I'm not sure if that's it.
And where would you say they are now relative to that 41%?
And we have internally watched our numbers, and we are in the high 80s.
How frequently do you calculate them?
We are keeping a pulse and recalibrating that about every quarter for our own purposes, and especially with the relationship with Steve Wozniak into technology. So we're calibrating quite often and watching. We also have a whole career services and internal placements. Most of our students are at this point with the school are hired almost before they complete the program.
Give me an example of typical hire.
Well, we've had most recently three of our graduates into GoDaddy. We are working on an intern type of initiative with Morgan Reed with the state CTIO or CIO. So most of our students are ready to go prior to graduation just because of the demand, such a capacity issue in the market.
Most of your students come in with some technology background or experience?
Yes, most of them do. The average age is about 26 and up. And most of them are already in the workforce and looking for continued certification. We offer what we call Coder for Life. So once you come and take a course and you complete that course, go out to the workforce, you can come back free for any of our courses at any time. So we allow you to continue education at no cost.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which helps our placement rate.
Okay. Obviously, one of the reasons that you're here today is because of the financial situation. So I'm looking at the statement ending September 30th, 2017, and we're looking at a loss it's near $2 million with a revenue of about $2.8 million and expenses of $4.4 million. And that's, in essence, the entire parent as well. I mean, the parent is not much bigger than that. So perhaps you'd like to comment about what the future looks like in terms of improving upon that?
Yeah, and so minus my CFO, who could probably really give you the meat of it. We've made a lot of changes in identifying the schools. When we acquired this group of schools originally, we had some other out-of-state locations that were not doing as well, and so we did some assessments and had decided to close down some of those locations. But in terms of the future, we're really more so focused on Arizona. We just had two additional programs approved, so we have rewritten all of the curriculum. And the enrollment numbers are actually back up, but we're not moving really aggressively because we want to be sensitive to students and what we're offering and the programs and the ability to put back into the workforce. I think right now we have about 38, our Phoenix campus has about 38 ground campuses, but in whole we're 340 online students, so that has grown significantly. The demand for online has really... That's what's moving for us. So,
well, in terms of improving the financial picture, is it improve the revenue? Is it decrease the expenses? Which is it going to be?
I think it's going to. The expenses I think are always going to be there because it's technology, and we're always including our curriculum. So I think we had a huge piece of that curriculum development in expenses. The revenue, we think we're confident, is going to increase from the enrollments and the quality of the programs that we're offering. And I wish I could give you more. I'm missing an individual that could probably give you more details of what you're looking for. I'm just kind of trying to give you the bigger picture.
To be quite honest with you, it seems to be kind of vague in terms of how you're going to get out of this financial circumstance that you're in. You know, I would hope for a more definitive description of exactly how you intend to either decrease expenses or increase revenue in such a way that you get out of this financial circumstance that you're in, because it is quite substantial in terms of, you know, right, the kind of loss compared to the total revenue that you have.
So we are in the middle of a potential capital raise and a partnership that will, we had to establish everything that we were doing, which is a big part of it was the WASU. Once we, and I'll just kind of give you an idea, when we announced WASU, the website in 48 hours had 78,000 inquiries. And we knew right then and there that we were probably going to grow rapidly, fast. So we've slowed things down a little bit. We are in the middle of a potential capital raise. We are looking at, if you read the press releases, you would know that what we announced was that the model will be potentially 32 U.S. academies, 15 international schools, and the accelerator located here in Arizona. So the future business plan is for growth, and there is a potential capital raise that will be coming in with a significant partner. I'm just not at liberty for the details of that.
Mr. Wozniak has attached his name. Has he also attached some finances?
He is involved, yes.
Is he contributing financially?
I'm not privy to that information, but he does have ownership.
Okay. If he has ownership, then he has some,
yes,
some obligation.
Yes, yeah. And he will be in Arizona quite often as we're developing and growing. This is really a legacy school for him.
I noticed, again, in the financials, your sales and marketing expense is essentially, in 2016 anyway, was at your revenue level almost. In other words, your sales and marketing was almost the same amount of money that you collected in revenue in 2016. And then in the more recent statement, that improved somewhat, but it still appears to be somewhat out of line. You've got sales and marketing expenses of almost $1.9 million in total income, gross revenue of 3.1. So still, sales and marketing expense represents about 60% of your revenue. So that's just something that kind of jumps out at me in terms of the balance that you may want to look into.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you.
Those are my questions.
Okay, Tom, I have something. On your refund policy,
yes.
This is in the enrollment agreement, page 3 of 5, at the very top line. There's a difference between the last date of attendance and the determination that the student is due. And the policy correctly does percentage based on the last date of attendance. But in sentence number 5, it says when calculating refunds, the official date of the student's determination is the last day of reporting attendance. So do you intend for the LDA and the date of determination the same exact ones? So therefore, your refund is due within 3 days of that?
Yes.
Because underneath it, then you have A, B, and C, which seems like they would be later dates.
So maybe we just need to define or clear that.
Decide which way you're going.
Okay.
And if you say that the DOD and the LDA are exactly the same, then your refund, no matter when it is you figure out, you've disappeared. You have to have that refund done by 30 days in the LDA.
Okay.
And the reason is the two is it allows you that he stops attending on Friday and you don't determine he's really not coming back until the next Friday. That's when the clock starts, that second Friday. If you choose to have them be the same, then you're locked in 30 days from there. And this number 5 then is not logical because it seems like you're saying one thing in the main statement and something different.
Okay, so probably just need to remove that and make it clear.
Probably saying calculating refunds official date of student's determination is defined below, and then you have your explanation of what it is instead of putting in the last day of recorded attendance, that spot.
Okay.
Last time we were here, we'd asked you for some clarification about how your school hours are because it had been confusing. Sure, most of that. But you still have a passing reference to evening hours, but then there's no reference of what those evening hours are.
Yeah, so I'll give you two folds. Because a lot of the students, we allow access to the campus to come in and use the equipment. And I believe they can access that from as early as 5 a.m. until 11 p.m. at night for campus access for using equipment or computers. And then there's scheduled time with mentors or tutors. So, but in general, that's the campus hours.
That is how it's worded. When you say their evening class hours,
you want to find schedule.
Like meeting time. It's really an evening, it is just open, then you just say that the building is available from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m., that type of thing.
Okay.
But the way it's written, you give all the specific stuff out during the day, and then you say, and there's evening class hours. You don't say what they are.
Okay, so we should define that building is open and accessible to students until...
Yeah, don't use the phrase evening class hours if they're not really classes, it's just resources available.
Okay.
And whatever it really is, I don't know. I'm just telling you what it was, how it was written, left me not knowing what you're talking about.
Okay, we can define that.
And your LOA is still not great, although improved. You say that a student who's on leave of absence is, you use the word terminated. The whole thing about a leave is that it's a pause.
Right.
So a leave of absence isn't a termination, but your policy talks about the students having been terminated if they're on a leave. So look at that wording and just keep in mind that leave of absence means they are still an active and enrolled student. They just have a pause in their expected attendance and participation. So they are not terminated, so they don't have to be re-enrolled. They may need to be re-registered or something, but your wording is just conflicting there.
Okay.
I have a basic question that might be losing my mind, but the application is for Coder Camps. And it's January 18th, but is it Coder Camps or is it WASU?
It is now WASU.
So is because they're mixed in here, so like on the screenshot for Arizona Public Secondary, it has like the website that says Coder Camps, but the school
that
is,
was,
are they
all before we too. The timing was just very difficult.
Okay.
And it is now WASU.
Okay. All right.
It should have been, because we approved the change of name, you know, the timing, it just all happened kind of at the same time.
Okay, so the app just reflects Coder.
Right, because of timing.
Okay.
But it,
right. Okay. I saw that you have, do you have a location in Redmond, Washington?
Yes, and it's about, we're winding it down.
Oh, okay. So the student, the number of students that you reported are strictly all in Arizona?
All Arizona.
Okay. And then I'm not sure if there's still, based on the timing, Terry, whether there still is a discrepancy between the program names that are listed in their catalog and the program names that are showing on your website, or has that been resolved?
I'd have to double-check licensing.
Yeah. So there, it seemed like they changed, that you might have changed the names.
Yeah, I think we were just pending approval on the name change, and it, like, it, like Terry said, the timing was just kind of weird on it.
Okay. I don't know how other board members feel, but I have some real concern that between 2016, when you had all the startup expenses, to 2017, we've got 9 months of data. You're still, your losses have more than tripled, from about a half a million to almost 2 million. And so what I would like is to defer action on this particular agenda item until I see some more definitive pro formas in terms of what you're forecasting and how things will change in the next year or two, so that I have a better feel that things won't continue as they are. So that's my take on this.
Motion when I resubmit the...
Oh, of course, yeah. But it's really not a motion yet. I'm just trying to get an understanding for the rest of the members of the board about should we approve the license, because it's a vocational to regular program license, so it's quite a step for me, and I'd prefer that
and I think
have
a lot
more definitive data in terms of what things look like going forward. in a plan, pro forma, a plan for action, you know, a more definitive.
I agree. And I have to say, without being disrespectful to you, I think it was a disservice to the institution to not have your CFO at least on the phone, because most of these questions and concerns are really financial questions. And the fact that, you know, that we know that technology costs lots of money, there's lots of investments, but at the same time, it has to be an ongoing concern. And so I would echo this recommendation and insist, you know, come hell or high water, in sickness and in health, that your colleagues are available to answer some of the questions that I think are, you know, understandably outside the scope of your responsibilities.
And so my motion is that we defer action on this particular request for a conditional to regular vocation program license until we see some more definitive data and we correct some of the things that our chair has mentioned in terms of the catalog. But your license continues as it exists right now in the meantime. So it's not as if anything happens to the license while we've deferred action. It continues. Can I get a second? Okay. Thank you.
Could we define or specify what you're specifically would like to see?
Oh, of course. I want to see what is a plan for increasing revenue, decreasing expenses, or both. In other words, I'm not sure about what the future holds in terms of future revenue, and I also don't know if it's possible, likely, because of long-term contracts and faculty that are hired and admissions folks that recruit students. I don't know how likely it is that you can all of a sudden in 1 year decrease expenses in a substantial way either. So need to know, you know, what's the balance going to be going forward? How's the revenue going to look and how's the expense going to look? Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. And an update on any new capital investments?
And would add to the motion and I hope the second, as he said, that we get, you know, recognize that perhaps you're not a financial expert, so perhaps we could get some financial acumen at our next board meeting that maybe clarify some of our questions.
Okay.
Is that in February or March?
February 22nd. And I am assuming more current in-house financial statements, if you have any.
Yeah.
Is your fiscal year in, what, December, do you know?
December. I believe.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, we have a motion second.
Second.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Okay. All right, we're going to take a half-hour break, so we'll return at 12:45.
Board members, if you could turn off your...
Would you like me to do the same here?
No, they're rechargeable. I think my battery is on.
Be good.
Good. All right. We are back in session at 12:53. Welcome back. The next item on the agenda is the supplemental license application for change of ownership for Arizona Vocational Training.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. Arizona Vocational Training Institute has been licensed by the board since April of 2013. ABTI was previously owned by Marco Ruggieron and his wife, Sandra Sheridan. Luis Mendez will now be the on-site director. Just so you know, since Lassinger, ABTI has been on quarterly financial reporting. They have now been purchased by Lawrence Belke and Michael Howe, and they are seeking approval of the supplemental change of ownership. And the board member is Mr. Jacob.
Like to come forward? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, board.
Please state your name and positions for the record.
My name is Marco Ruggieron. I'm the previous owner. I'm here to present the new owners.
Good afternoon. My name is Luis Armendariz. I am the new campus director and minority shareholder of Vocational Training Institute, LLC. Doing business is Arizona Vocational Training Institute. It is a pleasure to be here today, as our school's goal is to bring quality, student-centered HVAC training to Arizona through offering short-term small classes with personalized education. Please understand we have successfully operated an HVAC program in Florida at a COE-accredited school named Florida Academy, a school which has been licensed in good standing since 1990. We will replicate our Florida success in Arizona. First, we will capitalize the company by infusing it with $200,000. Second, we have recruited our top HVAC instructor from Florida, Mr. Steve Russell, to relocate to Phoenix and become our director of education. He has been in the HVAC industry for over 30 years and is beloved by his students. His role will be to instruct students taking full-time day classes. The previous owner, Mr. Ruggieron, will continue to teach part-time evening classes. Third, we are updating facilities, all while keeping the strong curriculum developed over the years by Mr. Ruggieron. As an HVAC industry professional, his lab is user-friendly and relevant to the employer needs, but needs some TLC from the ownership. It needs new flooring, painting, lighting, and lab layout. We also recently just contracted Cintas to upgrade safety and security systems throughout the campus. We are doing all these things to make this school a student-focused quality institution, building on the strong curriculum developed by the HVAC professional and making the entire school experience better. I can now field any questions. Also know that one of the owners, Dr. Zilke, is on the line.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here at the teleconference.
Okay. Well, thank you. And thank you for this report. I appreciate your opening statement. I want to talk about financials first. And talk to me about your projections for 18, tripling current enrollments. I know you mentioned you're going to infuse $450,000 in marketing into this program, which is roughly a third of your operating revenue costs.
That's correct.
So talk to me, you know, how you came up with this budget.
So it's based on the projections once we have VA approval and projecting what we have mirrored in Florida and the enrollments and the cost of the program. Now, the current cost of the program or previous cost under the previous owner was $4,000. We have increased that to $15,000.
If I may, members of the board, this is L.J. Zilke, one of the owners. We do have proof of workability with this model from our institution in Florida. And so, you know, our marketing plan is to use a marketing firm enrollment resources, which will drive all compliant-based marketing on the TV, radio, billboards, and a similar model of what we use here in Florida. We've got wonderful job placement outcomes and student satisfaction outcomes here. We see no reason why in a larger market, we're in a Southwest Florida market, in a larger market like Phoenix, we shouldn't be able to replicate our model, especially in the fact that the previous owner did have a lower tuition and spent $0 on marketing and advertising. So, you know, our philosophy is it's a wonderful lab and curriculum. That's what drove us to pay serious attention to owning this school and ultimately executing the deal. Was the lab itself, was a quality lab. But if nobody knows in the metropolitan area that the lab is beautiful and has excellent equipment, then no one will enroll. So, you know, the reason we're putting our own resources in here, and we've included our personal financial statements, we are ready, willing, and able, once we hopefully get this approval, ready, willing, and able to conduct a major marketing campaign. And we think that, along with, as Louis said, some TLC into the campus that we've started doing immediately, will drive enrollment up.
Okay, thank you. Let me start with the entry-level technician training program.
Yes.
It's 200 hours?
Yes, that's correct.
When I add up the clock hours on the courses here, it adds up to 202.
202.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you might want to check on that.
Okay.
It also says in the program that one of the courses is the troubleshooting, 13 hours.
Yes.
It's not a lot of hours focused on troubleshooting. Are you going over troubleshooting in other courses extensively?
Yes, we're doing by sections, by module.
Okay.
So probably the first one you read, the 13 hours, was the introduction. Then we go, we try to do 60% of hands-on.
Okay. This advertising form that was in my handouts shows the entry-level program at 150 hours. Is this old?
No, that's old. That's okay. The first one,
okay.
The first year.
Okay.
Then we changed that. Yes, sir.
Now, on your website, you show the entry-level program, but you show nothing about the technician training program.
It's extended out. That is currently being worked on by our company that Mr. Zelke contracts for the other school. It is a national company that's helping us brand through internet and other sources.
Okay.
Can I ask for on that topic of the hours on our website? It doesn't say how many hours are in the program. Like,
okay.
It's hidden in very small print somewhere.
We can certainly have that.
If I may, members of the board, the way that we do this at Florida Academy, again, we're an accredited school in Florida, we're very transparent. We think that the new admission standards are to give more, not less, to students. We place our catalog along with required consumer disclosures right there on the website, and we're replicating that in this model as well.
So when do you think that the website will be
We are working on that right now. We've already engaged the firm in anticipation of approval, so that, you know, the intent behind it would be once we're approved with the new ownership, that those materials will change and be up online.
Can you talk about your class schedule a little bit more for the entry-level program? It says Monday through Friday, 7 to 5 p.m. And then and the other section says it's 6 months long. It's a 200-hour program. You could probably finish in.
So the
4 weeks.
The 6-month-long program is a 600-hour program. The 200-hour program can be completed in 26 days, 7 to 5.
Okay, I believe you're. Yeah, it says 200 clock hours / 6 months. So you'll probably want to correct that.
That's
on.
Because the current program, the way Mr. Regarin has it set up, is only 5:30 to 9:30, is
it? Yeah, that's Monday and Tuesday.
Only Monday and Tuesday night. So that would extend the program quite a bit.
Okay, so you know, since this is your catalog, which is going out to the public, you want to correct this. It's a little vague. It's a little unclear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, absolutely.
Certifications and testing, are those included in the price of tuition?
EPA is included. EPA certification.
EPA, but not the R410.
Yes, that's included.
Yes, R410A is included.
You should probably put that in your pricing, that it is included.
Okay. I can do that.
Okay. Your payment plans, the rest really has to do with what we call puffery and concerns about how you're advertising your program. You're talking about one section. The payment plans are $500 a month. That's pretty steep for someone going into a program and trying to make that payment. Why pay thousands and thousands, up to $21,000 to train, and your program is $20,000? So I would be careful on how you're wording things, because...
So again, what you're looking at is some old media that Mr. Regarin had in there. It is completely changed.
All right. Okay, that was my big concern, because some things were just... You want to be construed as misleading.
If I may, sir, we did have the dilemma of not wanting to launch those materials online until we knew that we would be approved for change of ownership, even though we executed the documents. So we didn't want to put the cart before the horse. But when we did execute those documents, we engaged our firm, who's got a back page. So it will be different. So a lot of what you see online is the marketing materials now were under Mr. McGarren, which will be updated. And I'm making notes as well just to ensure that these changes will be made, both catalog and website.
And once again, what's the time frame for all these changes on the marketing?
Within the week.
Within the week. Okay. And my last question was about your grievance procedure. Step three, the director will investigate, interview relevant parties, and report his decision to the student within 2 calendar weeks. That seems a little long.
Okay.
You might want to shorten that up a bit.
Sure.
To maybe, 5 business days, because the termination, you're giving them within 2 business days, they request a direct reply with response.
Sir. That is a little expensive.
If that's all I have.
I have a thing. I'm looking at the resume form for Luis.
Yes.
And just can you help me there? I'm just looking at the dates and just detail people. It says that from February 2003 to February 2012, you worked for Kaplan College as a program director.
Yes.
Were you simultaneously, and that was in El Paso, Texas, but were you simultaneously working for Everest Institute from 2009 to 2012? Because it has the exact same dates.
No. That's probably a typo on my side.
Okay. Okay.
But I left Kaplan in 2009 and went to New York to work for Everest.
Okay. All right.
I have a question on it. This is an old one?
Yes. Yes.
No. Why, out of curiosity, why is the certification in number handling and your student transitions from Tennessee University?
I started teaching and with the school about 25 years ago. I started in Virginia, and we've been using Fair State since then.
They're like a certification program. There's a couple of them. There's ESCO also. You could use.
And
that's
not
weird.
No.
Okay. Sorry, my ignorance.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to approve the supplemental license application for a change of ownership, maintain the $210,000 surety bond, and continue quarterly reporting based on your past financial performance.
Yes, would you mind amending your motion to say that Gentry give advice on
that? In addition to providing the revised marketing materials.
Absolutely.
Motion, do you accept it?
Yes, I do.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is the Southern Alliance's application for change of ownership for the Dream Center Education Holdings, the Artists University, Phoenix and Chandler campuses, call center, formerly EDM.
Madam Chair, members of the board, the Art Institute of Phoenix, Argosy University, the two campuses, Phoenix Chandler, and formerly the EDMC Education Call Center Online, has now been purchased by the Dream Center Education Holdings as of October of 2017. They, as you know, many of the EDMC schools have been closed and taught out, and the remaining ones that are here have been purchased by the Dream Center. Regarding the Art Institute, at your August 24th, 2017 meeting, the board approved the regular vocational and degree granting license renewals by stipulated agreement. The agreement required AI Phoenix to post a $2,000,700,000 surety bond and to provide electronically the educational records of students. I think it's on a monthly basis or quarterly basis. Quarterly, and to provide quarterly updates to you. This report that was due has was provided to you by Mario Novo, who is, I think, on the phone. The renewals for both Argosy and the online higher education call center will be due next week, February 1st, with the March 31st expiration date. The online call center, as it stands now, provides online services to those institutions purchased by the Dream Center. I think they purchased a total of, if I'm not mistaken, a total of 63 campuses. Here representing the institution is Ms. Shelley Murphy, and with the Dream Center, and Chad Williams with Art Institute. And your member lead was Mr. Lupke, who has the flu, but I think Mr. Mittman, Dr. Mittman, has agreed to go forward.
That's a sense of deja vu.
Right.
Ms. Murphy and Mr. Williams, would you introduce yourselves and also introduce the folks on the phone?
Sure. So it's Shelley Murphy. I'm Chief Officer of Regulatory and Government Affairs for the Dream Center Education.
Chad Williams, President of the Art Institute, the Art Institute of Phoenix.
Mario, were you able to talk again?
I am. This is Mario Nova, Director of Student Licensing of the Dream Center Education Holdings.
Is Chris DeSanto?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, he went ahead and dropped off.
Okay.
Great. Would you like to make a statement?
This is probably odd because I was just here before, but it's all kind of intertwined in some way. But not other than Terry summed it up, we acquired the schools under EDMC on October 17th of 2017, and we're seeking change of ownership. The entire leadership team is all new. There's no existing EDMC in the executive leadership, so entirely new team. And we're excited about the acquisition and hopeful to get things moving in a really positive direction for the 63 schools that were acquired in 32 states.
And how many are here in Arizona?
Well, we have the Art Institute of Phoenix, we have Argosy Online, and then the support centers.
Okay.
And Argosy Phoenix.
Yes, I apologize. Yeah, that's...
Okay. Anyone else here to... Looking up at the at the sky for Mario or Chad, anything else?
There's Argosy Phoenix, there's Argosy campus in Phoenix, which is a learning site in Chandler as well under Argosy. And then the EDMC call center, I'm sorry, the DCEH call center, which is on Cotton, which supports the online entities of South University Online, Argosy Online, and Art Institute Online as well.
And we submitted our quarterly update, and I provided Mr. Mountain with the data
and I'm just here to answer any questions in regard to the local campus.
Okay, great. Thank you. Could you walk us through the relationship between the foundation, Dream Center Foundation in California, Dream Center Educational Holdings, and how they interrelate with the different schools. It's very interesting. It's really a kind of a transformational acquisition. First of all, they go for one not for-profit to becoming part of a not-for-profit holding, pick up 62, and then to have the foundation in addition to the educational holding. So if you could just kind of talk us through that would be great.
Sure. It's kind of history-making, first time that it's happened, and it's taken about a year and a half, and lots of meetings with the Department of Education. In fact, I was just there with them all last week. Dream Center in L.A. Is the largest not-for-profit home. They provide homeless shelter. They've got about 800 beds. They campaign and chair many initiatives on the homeless side, from human trafficking. Pastor Barnett has ties into Arizona, more specifically with Brent Richardson, who was the former chairman for Grand Canyon University and the founder of Grand Canyon University. And there was a real need for these schools, and the Dream Center Foundation wanted to be able to bring an education model into the foundation that would offer low-cost tuition, serve an under-market need, and so the conversations began, and that's the correlation of the relationship. Dream Center Educational Holding is the management company, so there would be a degree of some type of separation. And so that was the purpose of that was created. Brent Richardson is the CEO for Dream Center Education, and then we've got a cabinet of about five other leaders that are overseeing the day-to-day operations. He actually would have attended this meeting, but he has been visiting all schools on site, and I think he's about on his 23rd visit, school visit, just getting in front of each school and checking the morale test. These guys have been through quite a lot in the last 3 years, the EBMC schools. So I hope that answers your questions and explains the relationship between Dream Center and Education Holding, which is really the management company. In essence, what EDMC was at one time, but no affiliation to EDMC.
Okay. And the foundation itself experienced, I don't know if it was a loss or a drop in revenue in 2016, a loss of $37 million. And I believe that that's improved in 2017. But can you tell us as far as the foundation, since it's really the foundation that is going to sustain and fund all of the changes that are happening at these campuses, how that's progressing?
Well, we've only we're in our fourth month, and so there are a lot of initiatives. We have had to do an LOC to make composition scores and to open day balance sheets, and a lot of capital was brought in by the members in order to try to get things to meet those scores and those balance sheets. But there are plans for additional. We had to wait for the final closing, and that just happened last Friday before we could really make any additional capital adjustment or moves. But there are, now that that's done, the last group of schools came under us from HLC and Middle State on Friday. And I hope you don't want to ask me about each school, because I'm sure you could see the performance level of each of them. There's a We can now structure and restructure the finances. We have a timeline with the Department of Ed to restructure the LOCs, and then I think you'll see the progression in a positive way. But we'll probably, once again, be doing a type of capital raise. But the foundation, as of now, and as you pointed out, is progressing in a positive way, and they certainly are the biggest supporter behind everything.
And Dream Center Educational Holdings is also a 501c3, correct or no?
Mario, do you know if Riffout is a 501c3? I believe, yeah, I wasn't 100% happy with it. So. We should be, because we're all tied over. I just wouldn't 100% positive if there was something.
So when you're talking about a capital investment, are you talking about fundraising or?
Right, it's a fundraising, okay. Yes.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
That's exactly what I meant, fundraising.
Fair enough. Okay. And then on. Out of curiosity, for the long-term debt that helped in connection with the purchase in the notes on the in the audit on page 12, it talks about long-term debt that is $53 million, and just looking at the interest rates, I don't know if any of you can comment on it. It seems very high. The one, let's say, $35 million at 10% interest, and another at 8% interest. Is that accurate? It just seems like a big, especially for a not-for-profit, you know, that it seems like a high interest rate.
Yeah, and it may, some of it's tied back into the LOCs, which were extremely costly for us to have to do to, in order to get the transaction done. And so we have, I believe it's in October, we will be underwriting those, yes.
Okay, so I assume the game plan is to get out from under the LOCs.
Absolutely,
yes. And
then
either refinance this debt or
And we're also hoping,
pay down the debt.
Yeah, we're also hoping with the Department of Education that those requirements will be lessened, I guess. So we may have some relief from that as well. So we can have the higher LOC, because we're required to do a total of $80 million LOC.
How much?
80 million.
80? Oh. And I'm looking at the payment schedule on the long-term debt, and most of it is deferred out really to 2020 and beyond, so that gives you plenty of time to do that. The Dream Foundation, given its roots, which is interesting because it's not in higher education at all,
right.
But given its commitment to underserved and people with less means, do you expect the tuition levels at the various schools to change? Because I don't think that the tuition levels as they're currently listed would fit forgive me for saying this, but it's not exactly consistent.
Maybe with the type of demographics that we would get.
Yeah.
Right. We are, the board is going to be, once we can get through the LOC and a few more milestones that we need to do, we'll be assessing a lot of that. And maybe it's more scholarships that we're bringing in and tweaks to different programs and adjustments that will be maybe diploma-type programs that are lower-cost tuitions that are more accessible for certain demographics that can't do a four-year program but need a one-year program to get back into the workforce, the ability to put them back on their feet. So we're looking at a number of programs in that line to kind of serve that whole market, because it's really, it's diverse, really, really diverse group of individuals. And so it's absolutely the Dream Centers Foundation's mission to achieve that. So whether it would be through a lower cost tuition, more scholarships, we're still determining all of that.
Okay. Other questions?
I have some questions about accreditation, just like I'm trying to understand. So there's one school, I believe, that's accredited by SACS. There's another school that's accredited by WASC. You guys are talking about something with HLC. Is your guys' idea that you're going to consolidate all of those accreditations under one, and that being HLC? Is that what I'm trying to understand what's happening?
Yeah, I think so we have schools about every commission. And I think in a very ideal and great situation, we'd like to be under two accrediting bodies. Maybe WASC and SACS would be great. I don't know that that's going to happen anytime soon. Our big issue at hand for accreditation are the ACICS schools that are losing accreditation effective June 8th, and we've applied to WASC to move those schools there.
And what is the engagement with HLC?
We do have schools with HLC. And we are in the process of completing that accreditation. And Mario, do you have an update on HLC? I know Ellen's been covering that. We have some...
All I have is the approvals from November. I don't have any update from the current situation.
Yeah, so all the... Okay, so all the schools that were accredited prior are still accredited with HLC. We haven't moved any out from under HLC. We had some conditional requirements, and we went through those with them, but approved.
Okay, so the way that this worked, wasn't the, if you will, central administration of the school that was the hub of the accreditation? It was each, you had schools all over the country, and wherever they fell in line is where they were actually accredited?
Yes,
oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is why it would be really nice to be under two accrediting bodies at some points, and even try to get some of the OPIDs cleaned up, and we have a lot of work.
So you also have what I assume is like a board of directors, or you guys call it something different, for the Dream Foundation. Does each of the schools still have its own like board of trustees?
They do, and most are required by the accrediting bodies to have those boards of trustees.
Okay.
I see combining OPIDs is a very huge thing, and there are so many pros and cons, so I trust that won't be something that will be taken lately.
No. And actually, I've been working with the Department of Education on kind of a plan on how we can do that, because I think more OPIDs were issued than were probably necessary at some point. So the consolidation of those would be a positive and more manageable. We have 9. Ideally, it would be great to be down to maybe 5 if possible, but we'll have to see if we can.
Unless you decide later you want to sell some of them off and how you complicated your life.
That's not or that's right. No. That's hopefully not going to happen. But I would like to close and have new ones, but that's even more of a challenge. So
that is a very big deal also.
Yeah.
I just noticed in the ACICS contingency plan that on Friday, January 5th, just a couple of weeks ago, the RSU of Pittsburgh withdrew their substantive change request to Middle States relative to the addition of the Art Institute of Phoenix to Middle States. Now the plan is to put the Art Institute of Phoenix under request of WASC, but the Art Institute of Phoenix be under WASC. I just wondered, kind of a late in the game change, wasn't
it? Yeah, and it's really, it's a great question. So when we were looking at the transaction, we knew we were going to have these schools and we were going to be faced with this challenge, but our greater concern was the students and the impact to students, that if the schools shut the doors and the accreditation was gone. So we said we'll take them in the transaction and we'll do our best to figure out how to get the schools accredited and keep the doors open. So in that thought process, we eventually were anticipating closing in July, which would have given us a little bit more time to try to strategize and figure this out. We ended up closing in October. mid-October. And so we, EDMC prior had already started the paperwork into middle states, applying for the change of ownership application and applying to be picked up as the crediting body for that group of schools. The change of ownership was approved, and then they were going to take it to step two. And there were some questions on the application, so they withdrew. They asked us to withdraw from the November agenda to address some campus faculty and program type stuff. And
From middle states.
Yes.
Questions.
And so Dream Center Education, the leadership team, we sat back and looked at it because what that in essence meant is that we would not have gotten back on the agenda in time to get an answer as to whether middle state would have picked these up. So we sort of regrouped, and we were not fully aware of what EDMC had done at that point because we weren't allowed communication with those schools because we didn't technically own them at that time. They were part of a later closing. So we knew we had great relationships in DeWasque, and we said it's a sense of urgency. We can't communicate to students, we can't plan their future, and we can't make business decisions, which were all very, very critical. And we knew that if we started that pathway with DeWasque, we can. And yesterday we just had our review call with them, and it went extremely well. We knew that if we started with WASC, we could potentially get on their agenda and get approved before the June 18th deadline in which ACIS runs out. So we went back to Middle State and said, we apologize. We want to be transparent. We have applications at both organizations. We would like to formally withdraw from Middle State and pursue with WASC, and that's what we've done.
So is WASC going to conduct a site visit?
Yes.
Go through all the commission, typically the commission meets and so forth. But
yeah, we had a review call yesterday. It went really, really well. It looks really positive. There's great communication. It seems to be moving in a great direction. That would be absolutely the hope. But they'll pick that up and we'll be fine.
And you have institutions now accredited by WASC?
Yes.
You do. How many? Curious. Roughly.
Oh boy.
5, 10, 20?
Mario, do you know our exact number?
Under WASC, no. I just know the RDC schools are. I can do a quick count, but I'd probably say close to 15.
So it's the RDC schools.
That's what I would say.
It's the RDC schools, but there are 6 art institutes that are currently under RDC as campuses of RDC and WASC.
Okay. That's what I wanted to know, just the nature of the WASC relationship.
Yep.
So several Argosy schools are currently WASC accredited.
Yes, and we felt like we had a good relationship there and we could express our sense of urgency in the situation.
Thank you.
So it's not to consolidate here? You're not trying to consolidate all this stuff here, or you are? Arizona.
In terms of accreditation?
Yeah, well, so you have WASC, so I'm assuming Argosy must be there.
Right.
And it's going to stay there, or are you, is
we don't have
Arizona going to be in, like a hub?
We don't have any plans to consolidate into Arizona from an accreditation standpoint. We are, the operations or corporation is in Pittsburgh, and we inherited a large operations center here in Chandler. So our goal is, over time, we'll still always have Pittsburgh staff there that are working and doing things, but the operations center will be located to Arizona in its entirety at some point.
Good. It's the appropriate thing to do.
Now, any questions?
Well, given that it's already been approved at the Department of Education level, this transition and the accrediting bodies, I make a motion we approve the requested change of ownership with the stipulations suggested by our staff. And let me go back to the original summary from them so that I don't miss anything. it would be that we approve the change of ownership for the four locations identified here, the Art Institute of Phoenix, Argosy University, both campuses, and the Dream Center Higher Education Online Call Center, or the DCEH, I'm sorry, Higher Education Online Call Center, and with the following stipulations, that the surety bond for AI currently with the state be maintained. It's $2,043,700. Quarterly reporting continue. We've got a 2018 Argosy renewal coming up, I think, within the next week or two. And so it would be we would include that as a reference to the state board. In other words, we'll approve it. But the renewal is still in question in terms of evaluating the potential need for a separate surety bond for Argosy, and to provide an update at the April 2018 board meeting regarding the final approvals of the accreditation and the surety bonds and so forth for Argosy. So you'd have to agree to those stipulations, but first I need a second.
Second.
We agree.
Stipulations?
Yes.
Do you have a quorum?
Yeah. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. I won't be back. I'm done today.
For now.
You're welcome to stay for the rest of the day. We have a public.
Thank you for your time.
And she thinks she's put her time in. The next item on the agenda is a supplemental license application for Camp Friendship for Images Enterprises, Inc.
Afternoon. So we, at our last, when we last left off in October, we had a question on the financials about the acquisition for you, for Mr. Collins's portion. You bought him out for $30,000, mm-hmm. and the paperwork was all here in terms of the contract and the changes with Corporation Commission and the secondary. The question that we had at the time was that you referenced the $22,000 loan that Mr. Fisher had was owed by the institution, mm-hmm. right? And our question was, we couldn't find it anywhere in the financial statements.
Right.
So you have a really extensive package for us, which I appreciate, but I still can't find
I understand the transaction between you and Mr. Fisher. Can you show us where the...
I believe the CPA noted it in his footnotes.
Okay. Which tab is it? Is it in the...
It's in the CPA's completed financials on page 7, number 5.
Oh, no. Okay, got it. Number 5. June 30th, members of the company entered into assignment interest whereby the current owner acquired ownership interest of the second member of the LLC, you being the former, Mr. Collins being the latter. As part of the transaction, a $22,000 liability owed to the former member was converted to his equity. The current member then acquired the ownership interest from him. The company has no ongoing liability or commitments to the former member. So, I guess my question is, the $22,000, if the company owed Mr. Collins money, it should have been on the financial statements somewhere as a liability. Or is it that he owed you $22,000, and when you paid him $30,000, that erased the $22,000, or you owed him $22,000.
The financials previously was old, was very old, and, well, not very old, but they were from the renewal, and when we opened up the Phoenix location, he was doing things, you know, let me pay rent, stuff like that, and we put it on as his loan, with the intentions of paying him back, meaning the company paying him back. So yes, it was a loan, and it was the startup of Phoenix. So yes, it did go on the financials as a loan. It's just the previous compiled financials were older than when, I mean, this happened right before our departure, so they were new.
Right. Okay. I mean, the financial statements that we looked at didn't show the loan on the financial statements.
Correct. So the CPA, the CPA's financials it happened after the CPA financials, the loan did. And then on our in-house financials, it did not have it because he had already closed it out. And then we went through this meeting, and I his name is David, and I said, David, they need footnotes or something on what you did with that $22,000. And so that's where he came up with page 7, number 5.
You know, I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I understand what you did. And I guess the question, to the board, I don't know that it. I'm not an accountant. I'm not a forensic accountant, and so I don't know that it disqualifies the integrity of the financial statements with respect to what our charge is, which is to protect, you know, the students. It's still kind of a mystery to me. But I don't know that that's in any way disqualifying. But that was, you know, what we asked, and you requested clarification from your CPA, so I appreciate that. It doesn't answer it to me, but on the other hand, I don't know that that's, you know, a major... I'm just going to say that, to me, that's not, you know, a major deal-breaking thing as far as I'm concerned personally in and of itself. But I still don't understand. I still don't understand it based on the...
Do you want me to ask something different from him, or...?
I guess what you would, let's go through the rest of it, and then we'll see, you know, how this fits in the overall context.
And it's not, I agree with you. The concern is that these types of accounting practices don't move forward, and they keep doing things like this. That's
right.
That's the concern for me.
I'm not understanding.
I think what Mr. Jacobs is saying is that, yeah, well, just to be blunt, it's kind of sloppy to, like, he's paying rent, and you have an understanding between the two of you that you're going to pay him back. And so somehow that totals $22,000, right, that the corporation owed to him. So based on that, the $22,000...
This is why we departed.
Right. So the $22,000, it should have showed up on your balance sheet as a liability. So, like, for example, you have in your current financial statement, you said due to a related party, right? So that is... on page 4, it says due to a related party, 4983. Right? So the $22,000 ideally would have been not on this financial statement, because this came after June 30th when you bought out Mr. Collins, but in the previous financial statements which you submitted, right, and that were part of the official documentation, there should have been something similar to that for $22,000, right? Because then it became part of the record of the transaction.
Cool. Okay.
After.
So if I'm getting this right, you're talking about when he came in and he cleared out my books. Is that what you're talking about, the in-house that you're looking at? Or his other compiled financials? Because it happened after the other compiled financials.
Right. Well, somehow this should have been part of the statement of your not your income statement.
I understand.
He should have done
maybe a footnote or something.
It should have been in the financial statement. It's not as a footnote. In your balance sheet is like you've got people who owe you money, right? Okay. So those are your current assets or your long-term assets, part of that. And then you have, for example, an RV, right? And so that's a liability, your personal liability, it's somewhere else. But that's on your books, right?
Right.
You also had a $22,000 liability to Mr. Collins. That should have been on your balance sheet.
Not on my personal.
Not on your personal, on the businesses. At this point, it's like it happened. We're here today. It's 2018.
Just tell me how you want me to want me to tell him to do.
I think it's okay.
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 Okay, if it doesn't happen again.
Right. That's
right. And I think that, you know,
as to tick and tie yourself out, and it sounded like things were done rather loosely and not according to, you know, standard practices. And so we are expecting that if you come in again with financials that make no sense, we will consider that to be a lack of administrative capability on your part, that you're not running the business using standard business practices and that sort of thing.
All right, perfect. I mean, you just like cut me off like 5 minutes ago.
I would suggest 10.
Really efficient auditing term as opposed to
it's
it makes sense and it needs to make sense. Okay,
you're so nice.
Yeah, you are. Okay. Last time you came in October, there were 11 issues that collectively we had objected to between your catalog and your enrollment agreements. And you did fix a bunch of them. And in some cases, though, other questions came up. And like under your tuition payments and payment options, the wording on your enrollment agreement on page 1 didn't match page 38 of the catalog. In the refund policy, don't know if that's wrong. Yeah, in the refund policy, you're still not refunding exams and certificate report fees prior to classes starting, and that is not acceptable. The rule is that after the 3 days and before starting, the absolute most you can possibly keep is $200, and it looks like you're throwing in and keeping things that you ought not to.
Okay, I'll check that. Yes, we are. We do definitely refund all of it.
That isn't what you say. And so it needs to be very clear that you are not charging things before the start that you should not be. If you are choosing to collect them in advance, then they have to be refunded at 100%. And it shouldn't be this hard for us to figure out what you're doing. I mean, the refund policies, you know, as you hear in the meetings, people often make mistakes in the refund policies. But literally, you're like drawing out maps, trying to figure out what it is that yours are doing. And it just shouldn't be that complicated.
Now, with the pest control program, you have to apply to see if they're allowed to, with the Arizona Department of Agriculture, to see if they're allowed to even take the course or exam. So that's an application fee that we do have to take up front before. So can we do the $100 for the registration fee, and then we have to take that other fee up front. We apply with the state. The state does their own background. They do it by a name search, their own background. And then they get back to us, and they say, okay, this person can take the program, and they are licensable.
Okay, so what you just said is not in any way clearly explained in your catalog. And okay, the whole thing about consumerism is the consumer is supposed to know, after reading it, what it is that's going on. So if it is a pre-qualifying that they have to have a background check, how does she have to word that? Is it attached to the exact amount that the fee is what's paid? Do they pay directly to them? Do they pay it to you?
They pay to us, and then we fill out the application, take a copy of their driver's license, and then we send it up to the state. Separate, yeah. It's only that one weird program. Right, is that how they do it? The pre-qualification? It's the pesticide and the landscape chemical applicator course. Separate those routes.
Yeah, you need to like clearly explain it. So that's actually a condition of it. Do you want to stop the answering questions, please? And what is your name?
Mike Berry.
So if it's a condition of admissions that they have to pass these, you should have that clearly explained in your admissions policy. The prime, just like high school diploma, whatever, that's a precursor before you can start school. You have to have those. It would be in the admissions. And there you could explain that that there's a cost for that application.
And do I need to clarify in that it is specifically for those two programs?
Okay. Yeah, often programs have different entrance requirements. That's very, very common. So you just have to make sure that it's just very clear. So if there are a bunch of things that's saying for all of them, then you say all of our programs this, and you say, and in addition, these two programs, this is also required, and just make sure it's worded very clearly. People don't think it's this or this. They understand it's this, and then plus this for these couple. And then you clearly explained that that is a state, a non-refundable state application fee for that, whatever it is.
Department of Agriculture.
Yeah, Department of Agriculture.
Okay.
And it's not a school fee. Because I was left in reading and trying to figure out, like, how can they possibly be charging if the student hasn't started yet? And then something in it made it look like it maybe was some sort of a pre-qualifier, but it was so far further along that I thought I actually didn't understand it because it wasn't where it should have been. And basically, this kind of gets back to that last time you came in, the catalog was disappointingly unclear, and now still better, but unclear. And another thing that was added in is that we had objected to having non-refundable fees. And then now I look at your enrollment agreements, and I honestly, I feel like you kind of pulled the fast one. And now you threw in an online seat fee and word it as an online seat fee on the left, and then you give a different description on the right, and then the online seat fee is not mentioned in the refund policy. So I feel like you're kind of playing games with the dollars here.
So...
You used to have a book fee, and we asked you about how that works with refunds, and you come back with changing its name to an online seat fee, and then still don't tell us what you're doing about it in terms of refunds. So it is still unclear, in my opinion, does not meet the state requirements.
Okay. Book fee. If it's book study and they come in the class and do book study, then we give them a book. Or they can choose to take it online, and then we pay CertiPort an online seat fee.
So
break that out. Again.
Whatever it is you're doing, it has to be very clear in your catalog and in your enrollment agreement exactly what the charges are and what conditions are they refundable and not refundable. What is that fee getting them? So if there is a online books that's more of a rental thing that would be subject to proration, is it not subject to proration? It certainly shouldn't be kept before the student starts school. All of those things. It is so unclear. I wouldn't encourage anyone to sign your enrollment agreement as written, because I wouldn't be able to, if they came to the student complaint against you, I'd say, oh, you know what, I have no idea. That's not where we should be.
Madam Chair, isn't one of the things so on here for that CertiPort fee, it says non-refundable after 3-day cancellation period. And the student hadn't started yet, so they may not start for a week after the 3-day cancellation period is over.
But
that can't be, they haven't used anything, right? Don't they get that the first day of class or whatever? Then that cannot be there, is what she's saying.
The statement's not
refundable after 3-day class.
Okay, but let's just back up a minute. First of all, you have to line up all these different words you're using so we can figure out what you're talking about. And secondly, it's a three-part thing. Within 3 days of them signing their own agreement, they get everything back. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Correct.
After 3 days, but before they start, the most you as a school can keep is $200 if it's as a registration fee or cancellation fee. That's it. Once they start school, now they're being charged whatever you say they're being charged, and then the statements are made about how exactly that refund is applied. You are really muddying the waters and throwing things in that are being charged, not being charged within the 3 days, which is fine, but then after that, you're charging things that seem like, how could they possibly have incurred a cost for them? They haven't started school. Right? So it's just not clear that you are complying with regulation.
And I would say that, if I can, this is very complicated. You're making it very complicated, and I think if we can, simplify it, or we use the examples of, I think Keith has examples of refund policies to make it easier.
But she has so many different programs, and some of them are so short that there is no refund. But you're trying to take each individual enrollment agreement, what's your 9 to 11, maybe?
Yeah.
And they all have different types of policies. And so when you go to the catalog, it just gets confusing.
Okay, let's go this way.
Why don't we just do it across the board?
Hang on a second. So I've been doing this for 38 years. I've had schools that have had all various states they've had to comply with. And I've been on the state board now for 10 years, and I have never had so much trouble figuring out what in the heck are you charging for what and when are you giving it back. So you can't possibly be more complicated than the other schools we've had, so you're just making it more complicated. So if the refund policy is different by program, you literally can say there's an addendum for the refund policy here at each one. That works. You can have it, here's what everybody has, and here's special things for us. However you want to do it, the bottom line is you can't possibly be as complicated as what you've got. Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So, does anyone have any other?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
On your rent, the total amount is $74,300.
For the two rents combined?
Yeah, mm-hmm. According to the, your income statement. $32,760 in Tucson, $41,542 in Phoenix. But in the, according to the accountant in the notes, you have your rental, your monthly rents are $1,128 in Tucson, which would be far less than $32,000 a year, and $4,500 in Phoenix, which would be a little over $50,000 a year. So is there another rent somewhere?
No. We just changed everything with Kevin's departure. And consolidated a lot, so we were able to go back to the landlord and say, like for instance in Phoenix, there was no reason to rent the lot next to us because we have no intention of putting truck driving on there. So we were able to go back to the landlord and ask him, you know, can you cut off our rent to $1,000 a month because we no longer need that lot.
Right, I understand. That actually lowers.
It should not be higher.
Even less.
Yeah, it should be less. So,
right, but the numbers here don't add up to the number here, which, you know, it leaves like the possible suspicion that is there another rental property that's somehow getting rolled into this, because it's not, you know, if this is what you pay a month. On page 7, you get a certain amount in Tucson, certain amount in Phoenix. It totals $13,000 less than the $74,000 that you have in your financial statement. So it goes back to that same thing earlier. It's symptomatic of what you have in your enrollment agreement. It's like there's things don't add up, and so you need to go back to your accountant.
Yeah, he needs to put in there what the lease says and the difference, because we're only paying the $1,128 now.
Right. So then why is it $74,000?
If I can, I think what we're seeing is a theme between both the content of the things that you put together as well as what we're seeing in the financial statements, that you have to know what's in both of those. You have to be able to explain what's in those, especially if you're not going to have your financial person here. And perhaps you don't know all the requirements. And so have you ever gone and downloaded the regs and read all those and sat down and just read them straight through to make sure you have a good understanding of what's required? I would say that especially before you come back the next time.
And actually, he did call somebody on the board, and I think it was licensing, to get the actual regs when he did this.
You can download the regs on the web.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. But I could see what he did wrong here is he should have put, this is what your lease is, and this is what it
right.
is now.
I think the concern is that, but you still submitted them because you're still the school. And so when you're talking about administrative capacity, mm-hmm. you're not catching any of these things before they come to us. And so you're talking about, you know, six of us on the board plus all of the staff here to go and they're giving you very specific examples of things that are wrong and spending a lot of time doing that. I think the concern, and I'll, at least this is my observation, the concern is that you're not aware of these things, and that's a little scary because you can't speak to any of them. You know what I mean?
And when you submit things here, I understand that you're not an accountant, but you are the one who's running this business, and your math doesn't work, and your wording doesn't work, and unfortunately, that doesn't leave me feeling comfortable about how it is you're running the school, and our job is to protect the students. And so I honestly am not willing to approve or relicensing right now, and so instead, my motion is going to be to postpone this and ask you to get all your ducks in a row and make sure your things are taken and counting out, and make sure that your EA matches your catalog, complies with the regulations, which, as they say, right online, and put yourself back together in a packet that is going to.
Is he allowed to call in and join so he can answer
questions?
Anyone is
needed to represent you to answer questions. But even with that, you as a business owner, do you know really how much you're paying? You think you're paying $1,100 and really you're paying thousands more than you know? So if I were you, I would be looking at these things and evaluating and asking your questions in advance so you're not learning about your business here at a table in a public forum being recorded. You should know.
Madam Chair, may I ask? I also have one other concern, which is just on this org chart where it talks about programs and who's over programs. If I'm not mistaken, you're over the business programs for teaching, accounting, and bookkeeping.
Correct. And Jeremy.
Okay, but it has your name as the program director for business programs, and your name is the instructor.
Correct.
And so the concern is that you teach these things, but there's concerns over the quality of the financials that are being submitted.
Yes, my terminology isn't the same as you guys' terminology, and that's what I'm fumbling with. I'm a very factual person. Either you have the dollar or you don't have the dollar. And to me, I look and I say, okay, you have $1,100. That's what I'm paying after releasing that part of the building. And then $3,600 is, yes, this is what we're paying. So to me, I guess I'm reading it the same way as David is putting it. And it made sense to me.
I just had one thing. My laptop died, but I couldn't look it up. Remind me of the CDL. That's not part of your business anymore. Is that Kevin? Did you sell that off? I can't remember.
No, we still have it.
You still have it. Okay. I was just
We're in the
sure.
process of splitting it and putting it under a different school and licensing. It takes about 6 months to 8 months, they're telling me, just to move it over there.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So when you come back on the financials, meet with your accountant, make sure that the notes that specify how much each monthly rent is matches the expenses in your income statements, because they don't match. Even with the sublet and give back and all of that. And, you know, we don't want you to be, I mean, maybe you're overpaying, or maybe somebody's, I don't know, something doesn't add up, and it's to your benefit to find that out. So make sure that
the monthly income statement, you're talking about the income statements in his form?
And you submitted from
the
CPA. No, for this last year. I mean, all I did was got out my calculator. I got out my phone. I took, the monthly for Tucson is this amount. It's like $1,100 a month. And yet, on the income statement, it said you were paying $34,000 a year. $1,100 a month is like $13,000 a year. So it doesn't.
Okay, so he needs to know why did it.
You need to know so that you're not, because I mean it's like $20,000 difference. I mean, I don't know, maybe someone's taking money.
Well, that kind of the $34,000 less the $13,000 is the $22,000. Maybe there's some.
Sure. No, they're in the lease payment.
It is a CPA. It is a CPA. I mean, well.
But we'll get him on the phone. I'll pay for him to sit on the phone with.
As mentioned, in advance, though, you know, if you are enough of an expert in accounting to be teaching it, then I think that make sure that you can take out your phone calculator and make sure the number is
I'm going to next time.
And then also in all of this, you know, I compared your, you know, your new to the old on all of these EAs and saw how you changed the wording from book fee, online seat fee, and you changed the wording on it. And some of them, it said books and supplies, and you changed it to just supplies. Compare your old and the new. See why you made changes that you made. And then make sure that in your refund policy, in your descriptions of what the fees are, you're using uniform language from each point, and you're clearly saying when the student is obligated for all of these fees and how does a refund apply to them. So I make a motion to postpone consideration of the license renewal. And it will come up again and change of ownership. So we are postponing the change of ownership and reflecting that the license renewal, both of which are then we considered in March.
Finance complaint March.
So she will be continuing on month to month. So it's not a very concise motion, but nonetheless.
Second.
Any further discussion?
Yes, one last question. Education compliance consulting, you hired them to work with you.
Yes. She has been forever.
For a long time you've been working with her, this person?
Since 2013, I believe.
I'm not going to, I don't know this company, but if you're paying somebody who is supposed to be helping you address, I assume that they're helping you address all of these things that are, you know, that they're technical, they're detailed, you know.
It's very aggravating to me because actually I didn't change all this. I changed exactly what my list said.
Okay, but again, it was
this is like, I'm just trying to be helpful to you.
What I'm saying.
Like, if you're paying a consulting firm to help you out, they need to do their job. I mean, it's not for me to say good, bad, or otherwise.
At some point, we make a judgment about what's called administrative capability. And I got to tell you, from my point of view, listening to you for only the last, you know, several times, not several years, because I haven't been on the board that long, this recent stint, but you don't have administrative capability as far as I'm concerned unless you show it to me. I mean, we go back and forth and back and forth, and these are all things that if you don't know personally, you can hire them, and perhaps the consultant you have doesn't have very good administrative capability, but it all comes back on you. And the same thing is true of the financials. So.
Can
I ask one question? So I've already submitted my licenses. Should I just pull those back, and then after we change all this, then resubmit them? Because obviously the catalog and everything.
Has the catalog and stuff in there?
Okay. Okay.
Okay, so we have a motion second. All those in favor of postponing, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The next item on the agenda is a call to the public. Any of three of you? No, five? So do you want that? All right. Board business, executive director's report.
I just pulled down the whole folder.
We have a new address.
Yes. Turn it over. Approved. Nope.
Do you want to reply?
Yep.
All right. Legislative update, if applicable. Any other regulatory actions to like to do? Discussion and action on policy statement for electronic signatures.
Yes.
Yes. We do like the power down a rule states that the rules have to be known.
Need a motion to that effect, or?
So it's like Dr. saying, it's FMC Dr.
We make motion to have staff draft our policy.
To inform licensees,
electronic signatures, and no longer require notary. So it's going to be a no longer requirement.
And will everyone be required to use electronic signatures?
Correct.
That would help with your paper issue.
Correct. 17 million.
Yeah. He's trying to get shared drive space instead of storage space.
So we make motion to ask staff to draft a policy.
Second.
All of them there?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Back them. Next item
is revised.
I keep them for 30 years too.
Working in conjunction with the Department of Administration, the word that we made is that we have big time. However, our costs have quite extensive of illicit units.
Internal license.
So if I could have your permission to revise the schedule down from that we could change from 30 to 10, which would destroy a lot. As well as once we are live, the online will have a driver.
Where is it defined that we do 30 years?
In the retention schedule.
With the Secretary of State, so it's with the Secretary of State.
It's
So we could revise it, and you, if we do, you just notify the Secretary of State.
I can do it, because there's a clock at it.
Okay.
You have to apply for...
So you need a recommendation from us that we move, an approval that we move from...
Well, and I would also actually suggest, I don't know if it matters, I have to think through, but I would actually suggest 11, and the only reason being is that most, like, accreditations would be, like, for 10-year cycles, and so that you would have a year back, you know what I mean? So by the time you're in that, you wouldn't get destroyed, yeah, and that's what... I don't know of any one that's longer than 10 years.
Active would be 11,
oh, because the school's already gone? Yeah, yeah, who cares? Yeah, yeah.
There you have close at 5. I think you're fine.
So the current 17 million documents you have, we're committing them to electronic storage before we destroy them, right?
Yeah.
No.
Depends.
If we do this, we would destroy the ones we don't have to make electronic, right?
Yeah, just so that the clarification point is that the records that we're talking about in this particular retention piece are the records that are institution records. So it's basically the renewals and all of the files that are institution-based.
Complaints.
Student supplemental licenses. Supplemental license, complaints, all of that.
Yeah.
Not student records. Student records are maintained.
Right.
We do.
I imagine you do.
But close, you said 5.
They're closed, you have to make 10. So you would do 11 for active schools and 10 for closed schools.
And then for, you have 1 is complaint inquiry records, 2 is investigation records, which you have crossed out.
It makes sense, it's the same thing.
Okay, so it's condensing, so 2 is just gone.
And we're not talking about student records yet.
No, student records.
That's forever, right?
Yeah. So the motion is to combine the first and second categories into one with a 4-year retention period. The licensee records for active schools be 11 changed to 11 years, closed schools to 10 years, and the student records, not included, stay the same, which is at 50. All right, I make a motion to...
Second.
A motion second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And all opposed?
Okay. That's a state resource research. That's state money.
Election of chairman and vice chairman.
So, I nominate Trish.
I second that nomination.
I call for the vote to vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carry. You're a great chair.
You are.
Saves us money on a new plaque.
See, more state funding we're saving.
Brand new chairs. Nomination for the vice chair. I nominate Mr. Duden.
Second.
All those there, say
aye.
Good teamwork there.
I think that's a good balance, though, too. Finance, like one finance, one.
And as a former chairperson, he knows it all in.
Yeah.
And then for the complaint committee, the current members are Mr. Dugan, Ms. Leonard, Ms. Jacob, with the bunch of the...
I think Dr. Luck has been an alternate, isn't she? Kind of.
Who?
Kind of just predetermined you have been an alternate.
I've never had to go.
Surprise.
Do we need to have other people do that, or are you just reappointing them?
Okay. You guys good?
Well, finance committee, we can't do it exactly as written on this piece of paper.
Fine.
a non-member is
with you. Just talk to Jason.
I meant to say that yesterday.
Have you ever read the regs?
No, I meant I had intended to tell her to read some of the paper out. So the current finance committee members, who are actually members of the board, are Dr. Mittman and Ms. DeLucchi.
I could bring Jason back.
I would love that. I would love that.
You can get that through?
Are we at two members? We can get the third person as an alternate?
I'll be the alternate.
All right, then I nominate Member Suit for Dr. Mittman as the chair and Mr. DeLucchi as a member with Mr. Jacob as the alternate. And on the times when those meetings, you can say, I have enough to do. She needs a second to the committee.
I really like on her show. I'm really good with the arrangement we have.
Never happened.
I'm assuming I'm not going to get called that much.
All right.
Wow.
I think that's it. Oh, and then I can officially adjourn. The meeting is adjourned at 2:24.